Okay, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the March 17th, 2021 meeting of the Transit Commission. The tomorrow, March 18th, is the Transit Operator and Worker Appreciation Day, an annual day where we celebrate public transit employees and thank them for the incredible work that they do. As we all know, COVID-19 has impacted everyone's life in some way. It has been a year since the first state of emergency was declared in Ontario. Since that time, our transit operators and workers have continued to keep our transit system running safely. On the roads, on the rails, in the stations, and behind the scenes, OC Transpo employees have remained dedicated to getting you where you need to go throughout this pandemic. OC Transpo, Paratranspo, and O-Train operators are skilled professionals who operate transit vehicles in Ottawa's challenging weather conditions. Whether it's driving conventional buses, paratranspo minibuses, or trains, these devoted operators come to work every day ready to serve our customers. There's also a large group of OC Transpo employees working extremely hard behind the scenes to deliver essential transit services all across our great city. Whether it's mechanics, garage attendants, trainers, transit planners, dispatchers, customer service agents, special constables, support staff, and the list goes on. It takes an integrated team of people to run a complex transit system like OC Transpo. Together, they keep our city moving, rain, shine, or snow, day and night. To all OC Transpo employees, I want to say thank you for this important work that you do every day. Your professionalism and dedication are what keeps OC Transpo running so well, and Ottawa could not function without you. This year, more than ever, let's show OC Transpo employees how much we appreciate them. Here's what we can do. Tomorrow, March 18th, show your gratitude on social media by sharing a special thank you post and using the hashtag ThanksTransit. And that's a capital S on thanks. Transit operators and workers deserve our appreciation today and every day. Thank you. Okay, turning back to the agenda for today, I've received regrets from Commissioner Williams, who will be unable to attend today. Could the commission coordinator please call the roll call?
Commissioner Brockington.
Good morning.
Commissioner Caricato.
Hello, I'm here.
Commissioner Gower.
Here.
Commissioner Kavanaugh.
Here.
Commissioner McKenney.
Present.
Commissioner Olson.
Here.
Commissioner Suds.
Here.
Commissioner Tierney.
Present.
Commissioner Williams. Commissioner Wright Gilbert.
Good morning.
Vice Chair Cloutier.
Present.
Chair Hubley.
Here.
You have a quorum, Chair.
Thank you very much, Eric. Now, before we move on, are there any declarations of interest? No? Okay, thank you. Can we confirm the minutes, please? The Transit Commission meeting of Wednesday, February 17, 2021. Are those minutes carried?
Carried.
Thank you. Okay, our first item up is the presentation on Confederation Line and bus service update. We'll hold that. The second item is the Light Rail Regulatory Monitor and Compliance Officer Annual Report. I see Mr. Barada is with us today. We'll hold that item. He has a presentation, and he will be answering any questions on his report. And let's see, number three is the Transit Services 2021 Business Plan and Reporting. There's no presentation, but we have a speaker for that, so we're going to hold that one as well. And number four is advertising on the O-Train Line 1. There's no presentation or delegations for this, so we do have Will McDonald, the Chief Procurement Officer, is in attendance to answer any questions. Does anybody want to hold that item, or can we carry it?
Hold, I guess.
Hold, okay. Okay, so that was the last item, so we're holding all the items. All right, so we'll go back to the first item, Mr. Manconi. If you're ready, if you have your slides ready to go, we can start.
Yes, Chair, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Charter and Mr. Scrimgeour for the update. Just a few words before we kick it off. I, too, want to say thank you to the thousands of men and women that show up every single day to keep our city moving. They've done a phenomenal job. And with COVID being very difficult year for everybody, it's even more important to show our appreciation of them today and every day. So thank you, Chair, for your kind words and members of Commission. Just a couple of other housekeeping items. I know that there's a lot going on, as you're seeing in our business plans and so far our heavy agendas. Just a couple of touch points. I want to acknowledge we have had our first Fair Working Group meeting. So that one is off and running. We also had a number of paratransit meetings, and I say that because I know one of our customers reached out to both Mr. Scrimgeour and I last night saying, you know, where's para in your work plan? And we can certainly speak to that when we get to that item. It's para as a very, very important priority for us. And then last, I know Councillor Gower was asking about the follow-up on numerous commissioners wanted additional safety measures. We have met with those that wanted to talk to us, and we're going to memo Transit Commission back. So there's good progress on that, Councillor Gowers, and thank you to all the members that have given Pat the input. So we're going to get back to you in short order on that with some additional measures as requested. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Charter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Manconi. You can pull up the slide deck, that'd be great. Great, thank you very much. I'll start with just a quick overview of the presentation. Provide an update on performance of line one, update on the rectification plan, including the system performance during weather events, brief update on the rail reliability, some of the additional continued monitoring, train wheels. We are running the 11 train service plan that we communicated to the last Transit Commission. And then at that point, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Pat Scrimgeour, who will talk about the transit recovery update and COVID-19. So next slide, please. So in terms of the overall performance for the month, you can see for the month of February, we ended up at 98% reliability for the month. So that notes our sixth consecutive month where we've achieved 98%. And so far for the month of March, we're seeing that same trend where we're right at that 98% now for the month of March as well. Next slide, please. Recall this slide shows the overall trend, and it plots the day-to-day service delivery. Again, we are still continuing to see in the ongoing improvements in reliability, both on a monthly basis and in a daily basis. We are seeing less variability from day-to-day. We're not seeing the major dips that we saw if you look at, you know, January, February, March of the previous year, or even June, July, August of the summer. So those major issues are not reoccurring. We're seeing good reliability both on a monthly basis and a day-to-day basis. I think that's it for this slide. I'll go to the next one because my last point there is, you know, if you recall that this slide once again pulls together the two slides together, and we want to see the, we want to see it to be a green bar. We want to see it to be above that 97% threshold, which is the dotted line across the top. So again, we're seeing good reliability, less variability day to day. There has been a little bit more variability over the last couple months, but that's consistent with the winter operations. It is the most challenging month. You're faced with the challenging months, and you're faced with different types of weather events. So a little bit of variability there, but still very, very high. And you know, we're ending up on the monthly basis, we're at 98%, and the majority of the days we're 97, 98% and above. So good performance in that regard. Next slide, please. Very quickly, with regards to the rectification plan, communicated the last Transit Commission that those first five items are considered complete. Switch heaters, overhead catenary system, traction power, passenger doors, and HVAC. The two outstanding items remain the vehicle auxiliary power and as well as the fine tuning of the vehicle braking systems. With the 11 train operation that we're doing right now, we're able to do some additional software testing and validation that's going on. So that's the majority of the work that's remaining with those two items is software, and you know, with any time you're dealing with software, there has to be a lot of testing and validation before you put it into service. So we're going through those processes now. Slide, please. system performance during weather events. So these are all the weather events in which we saw accumulation of 3 centimeters or more. And if you recall, the switch heaters were improved, enhanced, and completed on December 6th. So we saw good, solid performance throughout the entire winter. You can see here, I showed the snowfall accumulation as well as the service delivery. So very, very positive results. And that's across the line, whether it be in the East End or West End. So very, very pleased with the results on the switch heaters and the work that was done in that regard. Slide, please. Last Transit Commission, we added some information with regards to some additional monitoring. So track work, we know that there is track work that's coming in the spring months. And we're looking forward to that because that's going to start to see, it's going to start to enhance the ride quality for our customers. It'll deal with some of the noise and vibration issues that our customers are currently experiencing when they're on the train. So looking forward to that. Obviously, the work can't be done during the winter months, but we are trying to advance some work now that will get us in a good position for when the spring is here, that we can hit that work and get it done as quickly as possible. The other piece that we mentioned last Transit Commission was train couplers. It was identified as a potential cause of some of the in-service failures. So they've identified some software that can be adjusted, as well as some mechanical modifications, mostly just it's wiring and making sure that the wires don't rub or chafe or anything like that. So that work is being completed over the next 2 months while we're in that 11 train operation. And then lastly, on train wheels, that work is still continuing. We're going to be able to leverage the 11 train schedule to accelerate the wheel replacement schedule. With that said, though, that the daily inspections will continue on the fleet until all the wheels are replaced and/or the set screws adjusted. We continue to work with the TSB and the RMCO, keep everyone engaged and informed as to the current status. And with that 11 train schedule that we're operating right now, RTG does have that second set of equipment here on site, and they're working through to get that up and going. They are running it right now. They just need to get to a point where, as you do a few trains, you start to get quicker and quicker as the knowledge and experience is there. So we're going through that process right now. With that said, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Pat Scrimger, who provided an update on the transit recovery. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy. So ridership, you'll remember that we finished the year last year in December. We finished the year at about 29% of normal ridership. And then in January, with the public health restrictions, we fell down to 18%. When I talked to you a month ago, we were at 22%. We're now back up to 27%. So we've seen ridership growing very quickly since the schools returned to on-site learning and since the stay-at-home order ended. And we'll continue to watch that and bring it up to date. And we continue to look for any needs that our customers have because of changes in their travel pattern or changes in the number of people traveling. The next slide, please. So to this point, there have been 71 of our colleagues at OC Transpo who have tested positive for COVID-19. 68 of those have recovered and are back to work. And there are 3 who continue to recover. And of course, we wish the best to them. And so with that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair, for any questions.
Thank you very much to both of you for your presentation. I see Commissioner Wright-Gilbert is first up with a question.
Wow, I'm never first. Thank you. I only have a couple of questions. Shocking, I know. So with respect to some questions on the presentation, the fine tuning of the vehicle braking systems, can you tell me what is the expected completion date of this work?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. At this time, we don't have a completion date. We want to make sure that we go through the right set of processes, make sure it's all validated and tested before put into service. So there's not a firm end date for that right now, but the work is ongoing.
When was the issue of the vehicle braking systems first identified?
Chair, if I may, in response, I just want to add to what Troy Charter's saying. Like any vehicle, we're going to be working on brakes for 30 years of the life expectancy of these vehicles. It's like any car, any vehicle. So the brakes are working just fine on the vehicles. They have to do some adjustment to the software. And that's the process that they're in right now. We've asked for a schedule on the software adjustments, which looks at everything from break rates and things like that. But just to be clear, I don't want any surprises down the road. We're going to be working on brakes for 30 years, no different than any other car, your car, a truck, any other vehicle, bus fleets, and so forth. So I don't want to, we'll certainly get you the information, but there's no end date to maintenance on these vehicles. It's forever. What we're looking for is anything that's a major issue that needs addressing that isn't, that's doing major disruption to services. And right now the brakes are working fine. They require a software upgrade and a reminder, those vehicles are all software controlled. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for that clarification. However, I would note that, you know, if my new car that was only a year or two old started having brake problems or, you know, having to have work done on the brakes, I might want to return it. But my second question still stands. When did we start the work on the vehicle braking systems, the fine tuning?
The work with regards to the brake rate adjustments is part of the rectification plan that was identified. You know, I think it's been close to about a year ago now.
So it's been a year since this has been ongoing. Okay.
Yeah, but
second question with respect to the presentation, the wheels, just to get a little bit of clarification, at the last Transit Commission, I specifically asked if the wheels were being replaced or if the jack screws, which are not actually supposed to be in there, according to the TSB, were just being adjusted. Now, I noticed in your presentation, it specifically said that the wheels were being replaced and or set screws adjusted. Are, just for clarification, are all the wheels being replaced or are you only replacing some of them and adjusting the jacking screw in others?
Mr. Chair, I believe we previously communicated at Transit Commission meetings that we would be replacing the wheels that have, you know, I use the term that have exhibited undue stress as a result of the jacking screw. Wheels that have not had that stress that's been validated through engineering processes, those wheels are deemed fit for service and would continue. So we'd only be replacing the wheels in which that jacking screw has created some stress that has the potential to result in a crack down the road.
So I guess my question is, why are we leaving the jacking screw in the wheel when the TSB has clearly outlined in their letter that that jacking screw was never meant to be installed in the wheel upon shipping, that it was supposed to be plastic or silicone plugs, and that the jacking screw was only meant to be inserted or used when the wheel was being removed? Why are we leaving those jacking screws in when they clearly have a potential for causing issues and aren't meant to be there in the first place?
Chair, sorry, we're not going to comment on TSB's positions. That is up to the TSB and we're under that. Their investigation needs to be totally independent. And I'm not going to comment on the TSB comments. They are active participants on every step of the way, along with our chief safety officer, metal experts, wheel experts, and Mr. Barada, who's here today. So we are doing what the group has all signed off on. I cannot comment on TSB reports in a public forum. That is for TSB to comment on, and they will do their due diligence and reporting out in accordance with their processes. So I do not want staff commenting on TSB reports.
Thank you, Mr. Maconi. I wasn't actually asking for comment on the TSB report, but here's something I will note. You've said previously that the TSB is not an approving body, that they provide a report, but they don't approve any of your actions. So I understand that TSB is part of your working group or whatever you want to call it, that RTG is part of and whatnot. But I don't think it's fair for you to say that everyone has quote unquote signed off on your plan, given that your original statement that TSB is not an approving party. So I just want to make that point clear.
Commissioner Gilbert, I've been involved in TSB many, many times. There is no objections from anybody on any actions that are being taken, and that is how safety works. If there was a safety concern with any of the action that would be taken, I can assure you that the professionals sitting in the room, that, including all of our staff, the independent safety expert, the chief safety officer, Mr. Barada, the TSB Transport Canada, would state their objection to anything that we're doing in that regard. So again, Mr. Charter is absolutely right. We've said in the past, the wheel is inspected. If there is any flaw to that vehicle, it is replaced. If the set screw can be adjusted, it gets that done and the wheel is signed off and put back into service.
Why would we not just replace the wheels that, or either replace the wheels or remove the actual jacking screw or set screw, as we're now calling it, given that it has potential to cause issues? Why would we leave that screw in there?
Respectfully, Commissioner, you cannot make that assumption that it's going to cause a failure or an issue. Actually, that's not what is being said. It's the opposite. It is the vehicle and the wheel is safe to go back into service in accordance with the processes that the safety experts are putting forward. So we're doing everything that everybody in that room concurs with. There is no objections to any of the processes. There's a lot of people with years and years of experience in this domain that have been involved in this process. So we're doing what the experts all concur with in terms of moving forward.
All right, I'll leave it there. However, I'm not fully satisfied with the responses given. Regarding the, there were some power issues on March 14th for nearly an hour. R1 service was put into place. Can we get some more details on what the issues were with the power to the system?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On Sunday, we did experience a few power fluctuations that impacted a few of the power substations in the West End. We had staff out there that were working on it at the time, and it takes just sort of like a house when you experience a power fluctuation, you have a breaker that trips, and you have to physically go and reset that breaker. That's what happened. The investigation is going on in root cause as to why that occurred, but essentially what happened is the power substations experienced some power fluctuations and that caused them to trip, and it was a bit of a cascading effect in that it affected one and then it affected another one and then it affected another one. They had to go back and forth between the substations, and it was right around when we were experiencing some really, really high winds. Don't know if that's related, but that investigation's ongoing right now. So during that period of time, for a short period of time, we had to implement R1. But for most of the day and most of during that event, customers would have experienced a few minutes longer travel time. But there was a period of time, I think it was about 30, 45 minutes around there, in which we did have to activate R1. And that was largely because, they were out working on those substations and, we didn't want to, start service up again and then, only to have another power glitch and, have to have passengers again on trains. So we're proactive in that regard in getting R1 going. And then when things were stabilized, service returned to normal very quickly.
Thank you for that additional information. I appreciate it. My final question has to do with our fare payment machines. We seem to be having some ongoing issues. Specifically, the longest one that I could find record of was on February 26th, where debit and credit was not available as a payment method from 9:50 a.m. until 7:15 p.m. Can you provide some information about the outstanding issues with our fare machines and what's being done to rectify these issues so that we don't continue to inconvenience customers?
Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Scrimger to comment on that, but just a comment to all members of commission. We have a very special contract with our supplier, Scheiden Bachmann. I can guarantee you two things. We do not lose any revenue when there is an issue with the fare gates. There's a process for recovering any fare loss. Secondly, if customers cannot get a ticket, we let them in. We have cameras there and we can scan them through, and we have attendants that get out there for that. We've had very, very good performance on the system, and Pat can speak to what happened that day. Pat?
Yes, thanks, John. Yes, we had two occasions when the connection with Moneris for validate from the ticket machines, the connection to Moneris who validates credit and debit cards, was not flowing properly, was interrupted, and the service wasn't available for customers. During that time, as John mentioned, cash payments continued to be possible, Presto card payments continued to be possible, all payments on the buses and all payments on the fare gates continued to work. Also, as John mentioned, our contract with Scheiden Bachmann includes a guarantee of 100% uptime, and therefore any revenue that we calculate we would have lost as a result is replaced under the terms of the contract. But Scheiden Bachmann has escalated this to the very most senior levels in their service organization. They're chasing it down for both here in Ottawa with their connections with the payment systems here in Canada, and they're looking at their core software back in Germany where their head office is, and Slovakia where their primary software development is done. They've got a full court press on this, and they will be reporting back to us on what they found, what they find caused these problems, how they responded to these problems, and how they're going to improve both the software and their response protocols.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Chair, that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Commissioner Brockington.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to you and colleagues. Thank you, staff, for the presentation, Mr. Charter and Scrimger. Just a few questions. Mr. Charter, a question I'll ask again from last month, and that is, first of all, the performance numbers of the ConfedLine are still very good, 98%. You reported less variability in the times where service slows down or is not being met. And my question is, are there any trends when service is down over time that we can focus our attention on to ensure that if people are being impacted same time of day, for example, over and over again, we can focus in on that? Or are the issues with performance just scattered and we're not able to pinpoint a certain time and day?
Yeah, very good question. Thank you for that. With regards to trends, there's no real identifiable trends in terms of time of day or even day of the week. I mean, you will potentially see more issues, you know, at vehicle launch when vehicles are going out for the first of the day. But, you know, launches at 5 o'clock in the morning, and if there's any issues, we generally are able to rectify them or get that train off the line prior to it impacting customers. But there's no real trend in terms of day of the week or time of day. But we are seeing a lot of positive trends in things like, you know, the number of, disruptions that are occurring. The frequency of them is becoming less and less, and then the impact of them as well is becoming less and less. And doors is the prime example of that. We've seen a huge increase in reliability of doors. And then even if there is a minor door issue, it's a minor issue. It's not a major issue. So real positive performance in that regard.
Excellent. Thank you. Eric, would I be able to ask you to put a slide back up Mr. Charter's presentation? It's slide number 7, switch heaters. Excellent. Mr. Charter, the service delivery column, let's just look at the very last row, March 2nd, 6.4 centimeters, 96.1%. What does that mean exactly?
Okay. So on March 2nd, the service delivered for that day was 96% or 96.1% of the planned service that we scheduled. And then the last column there, the check mark is there was no disruptions or impacts associated with switches or switch heaters on that day.
Okay. I thought this was talking about switch heaters, but this is the performance of the line on that day. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So to go back to switch heaters then, how are things going with switch heaters? Are you saying that we really have not had any issues this winter?
No, we have not had any service affecting issues. I mean, all vehicles, you know, you're sort of to Mr. Mancone's point earlier with regards to the trains themselves. I mean, we are working on them. There's ongoing maintenance. There's ongoing things that we need to work through. But there's been no service affecting issues with switch heaters or switches. And if you look back at where we were last winter, it was one of those more common occurrences. But very, very pleased with the performance of both the switches and the switch heaters during this winter.
Okay, thank you. My last question is regarding a matter that made the news, at least I believe in December, and I apologize for not asking the question since then, but it was water in Rideau Station, and it seemed like there was more water than normal in the station at that time. Can you just comment further on what the issue was then, whether it continues to be an issue, and how we're monitoring?
Yeah, if my memory serves me correctly, that was an occurrence in which there was a pipe that had burst. And it was a pipe that, you know, feeds the staff washrooms at the station. So that pipe burst. It was leaking into the tunnel. RTG came, closed off the water supply and fixed the pipe within within a day or within a couple hours.
Okay, that's good. Thanks very much for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor, for your questions. Next up, Commissioner Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric, could I ask you to put up slide 5 from the presentation, please? Thank you. Mr. Charter, thank you for the presentation. It's good to see that things are in the green for many months now. It's really great. I have one question, and that is with respect to the outliers on this graph, the little gray dots. They seem to be sort of all over the place. There doesn't appear to be, to my eye, any trend in the number of outliers. It doesn't seem to be necessarily improving or getting worse. Is there anything that we can learn from outlier events to try and reduce the number of future outlier events? Or do we just have to accept these as things that we cannot predict, but that they will happen in future?
Thank you for that. Good question. With regards to the outliers, there are things that we can learn from them in terms of our operational response or what the actual issue is or with regards to the vehicle, the track, the train. Our focus is when we have those events is to reduce the impact to our customers and, you know, maintain service as best we can. And what we've seen in the past several months is when we have these occurrences, generally what customers are experiencing is, you know, longer travel times or longer wait times of a few minutes. We're seeing very, very few occurrences where we've had to implement R1. Unfortunately, we did last weekend. But you look at the number of occurrences of R1, you don't see them very often. What we're doing more often, if we need to do something, is single track around, the vehicle. That tends to be one of our more common occurrences is vehicle related issues. So it's not that we have to accept them, but there will be delays on the line. There will be disruptions. I mean, if you look at other transit properties like, you know, Toronto or Montreal, they're much bigger systems, I know, but they do on average, you know, several short temporary disruptions on a daily basis. So we will have disruptions and, you know, it will occur, but those impactful ones that where you see that really drop in performance for that day, that's what we're working on reducing even more. But there will be disruptions, and it's how we react and respond and rectify them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Charter. Mr. Chairman, that's the only question I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Okay, seeing no other questions, that concludes the update presentation. Is this update received, please?
Received.
Received, thank you. Okay, our next item up is the Light Rail Regulatory Monitor and Compliance Officer Annual Report for 2020. We have no delegations, but we do have a presentation from Sam Barada, the Light Rail Regulatory Monitor and Compliance Officer. Sam, whenever you're ready.
Great. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to provide the Transit Commission with an overview of the RMCO Annual Compliance Report. Mr. Chair, I have about 12 slides that have been prepared to take us through the annual compliance report findings, which should take about 15 minutes. And once we've reviewed these slides, I'll be happy to answer any questions. And at that time, we'll have also the annual compliance report available for viewing if need be. So are there any questions before we get started? All right. If not, we'll turn our attention to slide number 2. All right, so this slide identifies the material that we will cover, starting with the RMCO mandate and monitoring context. This will be followed by a review of the monitoring approach. We're then going to review the areas monitored in 2020, as well as an overview of the findings, and we will then conclude with the remedial actions, as well as provide a summary of what is planned for the next quarter. We'll turn to slide 3. Which outlines the RMCO scope and mandate. We recall that the RMCO role was created as part of the delegation agreement signed between the city and the Minister of Transport. And in short, the RMCO mandate is about monitoring city regulations. And it's important to note that the city's mandate to the RMCO was quite specific in stating first that this applies only to the Confederation Line, so it does not apply to the Trillium Line or bus service. Second, the monitoring started only after Revenue Service, which means that the RMC was not involved in the design, construction, or implementation. And third, the RMCO is not tasked with assessing the adequacy or efficiency of city regulations or programs. Neither is the RMCO tasked with assessing the effectiveness of the equipment or technologies. Having said that, an important point to keep in mind is that the RMCO is one of many layers of oversight that work collectively to support safety. In fact, you may know that OC Transpo has an oversight group, and the city hires experts periodically to perform audits and assessments. So all these layers work together to reduce risk and support a safe operation. I will now turn to the next slide, which provides us an overview of the context and what was monitored in 2020. So 2020 was a busy year for monitoring, which encompassed track, light rail vehicles, as well as the catenary. And to bring context on the areas monitored, these are made up of thousands of components which are inspected and maintained by many types of employees, each performing numerous activities daily. The other point to consider is that the period of time monitored covered the first year of Revenue Service, which included the first operational winter. So the big picture is that the monitoring was very broad and reviewed the early stages of an operation that brings together high-end technologies, equipment, processes, as well as people. I would also add as a general observation to bring perspective based on my experience as Vice President of Safety and Sustainability for the largest railway in Canada, that the City of Ottawa has invested in advanced technologies and infrastructure which mitigate risks faced by other commuter operations. And the types of risks that would keep me up at night in my previous position are largely mitigated at the Confederation Line. I'll just give three examples. First, there are no level crossings on the Confederation Line. And this is normally a significant source of risk for many commuter lines and passenger lines. Second, the track is dedicated, whereas many commuter lines share trackage and have to consider dangerous goods and managing the movements of trains with other types of equipment. And third, in most railways, train operators need to identify and comply with signals. It's a lot like us individually driving our vehicles and looking for lights and complying with them. So that needs a, you know, the cognitive ability to recognize and react to the signals, where I'm sure you know that for the Confederation Line, the city has invested in CBTC, communication-based train control system, which is designed to control train movements and to prevent collisions. We'll turn to slide 5, which gets into the monitoring approach, which was approved by City Council with the work plan that was submitted in September of 2018. In summary, this approach is risk-based, and it sets out to monitor progressively the 6 key risk areas which are typical in railway commuter operations. And I will add at this point that the RMCO monitoring is an ongoing process, so it will continue as we move forward, and it will revisit these risk areas, including those where findings were identified. We'll turn to slide 6, which shows the period of time for each area monitored in 2020. So 3 areas monitored that we saw earlier. And a key point to make here is that these 3 areas, for these 3 areas, the work is performed by Alstom. So Alstom not only inspects and maintains LRVs, but they have also been subcontracted by RTM to inspect and maintain both the track as well as the catenary for the Confederation Line. And in summary, and we're going to get to the details in the next few slides, but the findings show areas of strength and opportunity. That takes us to the next slide, which reviews the documents and processes for the track. I'll say at this point that every finding is being addressed through the remedial actions process, which we will review later. So for each segment monitored, The review encompassed documents, processes, training, as well as execution. And if you ask why do we cover those areas, it's simply to give the city the objective evidence that regulations and requirements are not only met on paper, but they're also implemented in the field. So with respect to track inspections and repairs, the review of documents showed very substantive material which specifies when and how inspections are to be done. However, there were some issues relative to missing criteria, specifically for mainline inspections at high temperatures, rapid temperature changes, as well as combined rail wear criteria. With respect to systems and processes, Alstom uses a robust SAP-based information system. However, an opportunity was found to strengthen their system for flagging and escalating inspections which are not done on time. We'll turn to the next slide, which continues with the overview of findings for track inspections and repairs. So with respect to training, the first is that training was in progress, quite structured with a training matrix that was provided by Alstom. However, there were some employees that did not get the delivery of all the courses that they were supposed to have. And the second opportunity is that they lacked field supervisory oversight. With respect to the execution, we verified 9 types of track inspections. And of these, there were 4 fully compliant, 3 mostly compliant, and 2 partially compliant. And this corresponds to Section 5 of the annual compliance report with the tabular overview of the results. I will note that the data monitored in reviewing these track inspections and repairs was from Revenue Service until the first half of 2020. It's also important to note that most of the issues identified occurred during the first winter of operation and that more recent data does show improvement. With respect to repairs, we verified over 300 repair records and found that about 3/4 were done on time, whereas the other quarter were done later than what was required by their priority. We'll turn to slide number 9, which will take us through the light rail vehicles as well as the catenary. So the review of documents again shows very substantive material. There's give you a sense of what we're talking about, over 100 documents that have been developed and provided by Alstom, which specify when and how inspections are to be done. So clearly, they've done a lot of work to ensure that there are clear expectations relative to what needs to be done and how it's to be done. However, there were 2 issues. The first is an inconsistency between RTM and Alstom documents on the mileage tolerance for LRVs, as well as the disposition as to what to do when those tolerances are exceeded. The second point was a lack of extreme weather criteria for both LRVs as well as the catenary. With respect to the systems, again, Alstom uses a robust SAP-based information system, and no issues or opportunities were identified on that point. We'll turn to slide number 10. Which reviews the training as well as execution piece. We found that Alstom is structured and again has a training matrix clearly identifying what courses need to be taken by each type of employee. Now, with respect to training delivery, the monitoring showed that not all the training had been delivered to the employees that were monitored, whether it's to the power technicians that are tasked with inspecting and maintaining the catenary, or the maintenance vehicle technicians, which are tasked with inspecting and monitoring the LRVs. With respect to the execution, a review and analysis of inspections and repairs and the data that goes along with that, as well as the records, showed that scheduled LRV inspections, which are mileage-based, were largely done according to requirements. However, there were a number of LRVs which did not get their inspections within the prescribed mileage or allowable tolerance. Again, most of the issues occurred during the first winter. For the catenary, a similar situation was found. where most were done according to schedule, but a small number, about 10%, were missed during the winter months. We also verified repair records, and with respect to LRVs, we found that some repair records were missing. Most were done, but some were missing. And we found a similar situation for catenary repairs, where again, most were done, but some were missing. I'll turn our attention to slide 11, which deals with remedial actions. And I know this is top of mind for everyone because, you know, we are monitoring a very broad scope. We're finding, you know, some areas of non-compliance. So it's normal to want to ensure that there is a process for following up with those findings. And I will assure you that there is a very diligent remedial actions process. But to provide the context, first, the monitoring process itself shares the findings expediently with stakeholders, so OC Transpo, RTM, Alstom. And this is to support rapid remedial action. So, you know, the RMCO does not hold on to the findings until the monitoring is complete. It's shared immediately in the interest of generating remedial actions as quickly as possible. The second point is that OC Transpo and the RMCO have engaged RTM and Alstom on a continuous basis to request remedial actions to address these findings. And finally, that a structured approach is being used to track the remedial actions in tabular format, as you see a sample of in this slide. And there's a quarterly review, and this is ongoing and does continue in 2021. So Annex 5 of the Annual Compliance Report has the full tables of remedial actions, which, as I said, continues to be reviewed and monitored today. And that brings us to the final slide, which provides an overview of what we have discussed. So overall, as we said, the monitoring scope was quite broad. It has identified areas of strength and opportunity. The findings are being addressed through a formal remedial actions process. And with respect to RMCO activities over the next couple of months, following this meeting, the plan is to provide the annual compliance report to City Council during their meeting of April 14th. And finally, the RMCO monitoring activities will continue in 2021. And we'll start monitoring in April with a focus on the risk areas which have not been reviewed to date. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This completes the review, and I will turn it back to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barada, for that excellent report. Is there any questions for Sam? Councillor McKinney?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the update. I just want to get some clarification. It's a big document, so I'm just looking back through it now. And I see that. So you indicated that RTM didn't do the necessary inspections and didn't file inspection reports during January and February of 2020. And why is that? Like, why would they not have filed those inspection reports?
Thank you for the question. I'll respond with a couple of points. I mean, the first one is that the RMCO monitors city regulations and reports back to the city on the findings. The RMCO does not investigate the causes. Having said that, if we take a step back and look at some of the things that we talked about, this is a very broad operation with, you know, advanced technologies, equipment, and people and processes coming together. The monitoring focused on the first year of revenue service. It also encompassed winter. We know that winter is a very challenging period for not only the railways or commuters, but any type of transportation operation. In fact, even ourselves, when we drive, we have to be more careful in the winter. We have to drive a bit slower. There's also extra work that's generated, you know, around additional maintenance activities, cleaning, and so on. So, you know, I'm not going to give you a direct answer as to why that was because I did not investigate it, but I did want to bring some context as to, you know, the factors that make winter particularly challenging, especially in the first winter of operation.
No, I understand that winter is challenging, but they're supposed to do inspections. They're supposed to file inspection reports, and they didn't. And also under D, execution of track inspection reports, it says also that Alstom carried out only two extreme weather inspections when, you know, the process dictates that they're supposed to carry out five or more. So again, why are we not ensuring that these inspections are happening as per the agreement?
Yeah, I'll turn it over to OC Transpo if they have any comment on this, but you're correct that, you know, those five specific inspections relative to high temperature variations, that two were done. And this has to do with, you know, the monitoring of temperature variations and the execution that needs to be pretty expedient after those temperature variations are registered. But that is just one piece of the entire portfolio of monitoring activities. And they have to do daily inspections. They have to do twice per week track inspections, monthly track inspections, 3-month inspections, and so on. So, you know, in terms of workload, that particular element is not the biggest piece, but I agree with you, it needs to be done. I'm going to say in general terms that, you know, this is an operational startup with, you know, a learning curve, which would not be unexpected when so many technological process and equipment components come together. So there's that piece. There's the learning. There's the winter operation, which is challenging in terms of variable workload, which is the case for any type of operation. So the fact of the matter is that when you look at these inspections as a whole, of the 9 areas that were monitored, 4 were fully compliant, 3 mostly compliant, and 2 partially compliant.
I still, again, with all due respect, we let RTM off the hook all the time. They are not living up to their obligation to the city. So I guess my question then is, you know, will we see the missing documents, these missing inspection documents? If they're supposed to inspect a certain number of times and they're not, that's problematic, because we know what the problems were on that rail line last winter, less so this winter, but we did not have the ridership that, nor the extreme weather that we normally have, or that we had in 2020. And are extreme weather event inspections being carried out now, or should we expect that RMCO will raise this again next year? Like, where are we at this year? I think that people are losing faith in RTM's commitment to living up to the agreement that we signed with them on maintenance for this system. So it is very concerning to me that, you know, number of inspections aren't being carried out, that as per the agreement. So are they being carried out now? Like, are we getting, did we get the extreme weather event inspections this year?
Yeah, I'll turn it over to we'll see Transpo in a minute, but I will provide you this reassurance, and this is through the structured remedial actions process that I referred to earlier, that we did do some monitoring relative to the findings. And we did verify that the single event that took place this year relative to high temperature variation within a short period of time, that an inspection was done. So on that point, you know, there was no doubt, as I said, that the period of time monitored was really the first year of operation, and it was the first winter. Having said that, we do see an improving trend. And this winter, although we didn't do an exhaustive monitoring of track as we did last year, the areas that we verified have been executed properly.
My last question then is, I'd like to know if staff are going to provide a full accounting to us of the remedial work that has been carried out.
John, did you want to speak to that?
Certainly, Chair. In relation to this, Commissioner McKinney?
Yes, absolutely. I think that we, you know, for myself, moving forward, it would be good to know what remedial work has been carried out so that we can be assured. I mean, we did have a good winter, and I don't discount that. And it's not just because of low ridership. I think that, you know, there has been, you know, some consistent monitoring, inspections, upgrades to the system. But certainly, you know, I think that some accounting of the remedial work that's been carried out to date should be made available to us.
Commissioner, you're spot on. I you know, and again, I'm not here to defend RTM, nor will I, but I will say this: the system is working, the process is working. This oversight that we implemented, you know, first again in North America, we're the only self-regulated railroad in North America of this construct. Mr. Barada is independent from us. He reports to the city manager and is supported by the city clerk. You know, I'd be concerned if he went in and did his work and didn't find anything, particularly in a startup. And so your question is exactly what we want to hear is, you know, there's an issue. What are you going to do about it? And how do we hold them accountable? No different, whether it's contracted out or not. I mean, we see operational audits in the city all the time. I would have been very concerned if Mr. Barada would have came to us and said, you know, everything's perfect. There's no issues. And this is about checks and balances. And Mr. Barada's experience is extensive. He's run really complicated operations. And so the fact that he goes in and he goes in deep and he's very thorough. He knows what to look for. He's identified some gaps. And there isn't any safety risks out there. They're about things that are supposed to be done. And best-in-class railroads do this. They look for the things that need to be closed off, and we will close them off. And absolutely, we'll share that with you, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Manconi, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Brockington, please.
Thanks, Chair. Just a minor question, and that is about follow through with the recommendations that accompany this report. A rectification plan has been developed, and I want to know, ultimately, the responsibility is with OC Transpo to follow up on those recommendations, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then, Mr. Manconi, how do you plan to inform the Transit Commission of the work that's been completed as a result of this audit?
I'm happy to issue a memo or a report and a verbal, whatever, at future meetings. Mr. Charter and Mr. Brandon are the Mr. Richards are the two people accountable for that and to close those gaps with RTM. So I'm happy to report back whatever way you'd like.
Okay. Let me just ask Mr. Barada, will you, as part of your 2021 report a year from now to this commission, will you have reviewed the recommendations you made based on the 2020 audit to make sure, oh, that was recommended, that's been done, this was recommended, that's been done? Do you do that type of follow-up?
Yes, we do. And as I've noted, Annex 5 of the annual compliance report provides a detailed table of all the findings as well as the remedial actions, their status, you know, specific actions taken. This is an ongoing process, but it's structured so that at least quarterly We have a review with all the stakeholders to find out where we are. We also do some monitoring. And as part of the risk-based monitoring approach that I referred to earlier, we will revisit some of these areas as we move forward. So the first priority is to ensure that we get adequate coverage around the six key risk areas, and we've covered four of the six. So this year we'll be focused on, in priority, on giving the city some oversight, monitoring relative to the two areas that have not been done. But certainly when we start to repeat the areas that have been already monitored, we're going to be looking at what was found and where we're at with it.
Excellent. Mr. Manconi, my suggestion just for you to take under advisement, I'm not giving direction, would be if these annual reports are scheduled to come to us in March, halfway between these annual reports is September. And so maybe as a good practice or good governance at our September Transit Commission meetings, we just receive a brief update on here's the recommendations we heard in March, and here's what we've done, we've undertaken to address the recommendations, and Transit Commission, we're just giving you an update on where we are. So that's my suggestion. That way we, through our oversight, say, all right, these were the set of recommendations provided in the annual report. Here's what OC Transmo has done. We get an update. I think that's the best way to do it. So I just leave that with you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just I would like Mr. O'Connor to comment. And the reason is I have to stay independent of this process. I don't want to compromise that independence because Mr. Barata reports to city manager and is supported by Mr. O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor, would you have any comments on that? Or do we take that as advisement and recommendations?
Mr. Chair, I like the way that the transit commissioner phrased it. We'll take it under advisement.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Commissioner Wright Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barata, on page 21 of your report, it notes with respect to training that employees have received and that only half of the employees received all the required courses and training, and that there were issues, and this is under the compliance rating of opportunity, which is obviously the lowest rating, that there were issues the lead hand or field supervisory oversight category. Are you able to provide more details with respect to what those issues were with the field supervisory oversight?
Yeah, certainly. And just a clarification that opportunity is not the lowest level. The lowest level would be not compliant. Opportunity is something that needs to be improved. But there's at least a foundation that they build from. So in this particular case, like I mentioned in the slides that I went through, there's a training matrix. There's clear direction on what the expectations are. But what I found in the monitoring is that, you know, there were some employees that had been hired over the last few months and that they were being trained progressively, and that the training matrix was actually quite broad. It had a large number of courses in there. And what it really required is Alstom to review all those courses and ask themselves the question, before we allow an employee to work under a more experienced employee, a lead hand as an example, what are the minimum courses that would be necessary? So things like operating rules, things like track inspection guidelines would be necessary. And they did exactly that because, you know, their response was that, yeah, this training matrix is quite exhaustive. We have employees that work under a more experienced lead hand as they're getting all their courses. And for purposes of clarity, I made the point that, you know, they need to specify for themselves internally, as well as for the city's oversight process, of those courses that are quite broad in the training matrix, which ones are a strict necessity before allowing somebody to work under an experienced employee. So they did that, and we should see, I think, an improvement relative to that as we move forward. Now, with respect to the supervisory oversight, I just want to be clear that the groups of employees that we saw in the field were typically an experienced lead hand with some other employees, some of which are very experienced, others are less experienced. So there is some level of supervision of a lead hand over the employees working in their particular group. Having said that, the opportunity to elevate the system in terms of robust, monitoring of field activities to drive quality, completeness, and efficiency, typically you'll find that, railways, commuter operations, will have some supervisory oversight. OC Transpo certainly has that for their operators that work in the field. So they have supervisors that go out there and perform structured proficiency tests. And that's the part that was missing for Alstom. And they have agreed to put that together, including not only the structured proficiency testing, but also a 3P system, which reviews the parts, the processes, and the people on a more formal basis.
So when you say that there are issues with the field supervisory oversight, it's not just for clarity. So, because I read the report one way, but I'm sort of hearing something different from you now. So it might have been my interpretation of the report. So I want to make sure that I'm clear. It's not that field supervisory oversight was missing. It's just that it wasn't as robust as it could have been or as complex.
That's a good way of putting it. There's definitely a supervisor out there. The supervisor does spend some time in the field. We're talking about Alstom because their employees are tasked with performing the track inspections and maintenance. But the paper trail, the records, the lines of defense require structure. And this is what I thought when we talk about opportunity, this is their opportunity to raise the bar on something that they do, but is not as structured as it could be.
And presumably the field supervisor has taken all the required courses?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure on that.
Yes.
So to be honest, when I read the report, and again, it was likely just my interpretation, but again, there's a lot of people reading these reports, so I just want to be clear. When the report notes on page 21 that there's only half of the employees, the Alstom employees, obviously, had received all required courses, and that there were issues with the lead hand or field supervisory oversight, we shouldn't assume that there's, 50% of the Alstom employees running around who don't necessarily know what they're on about, right? Like, they don't know what they're doing. It's more that the training matrix was very broad and that they have received the required training. We can take comfort that they received the required training that they need to do their specific job, but they do still need supervision, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And just as a point of clarification, we're talking here about guideway technicians and the monitoring also samples. So we don't verify the training record of every employee. So we verified, a total of 6 employees out of the 12 or so guideway technicians. And of those, we found 3 that had every course and 3 that had some courses, but not all. And so it becomes an issue of Alstom specifying of that very broad training matrix, which ones are a strict necessity before allowing an employee in the field, even if they're under the supervision or the guidance of a more experienced lead hand.
Okay, that clarifies it for me. Thank you. And then similarly, on page 28, the report indicates only 10%. About 10% of the Alstom employees working on the vehicles, the LRVs, had not received all required training. Is there a supervisory or lead hand program in place there as well for those working on the LRVs?
Indeed, there is a supervisor at the MSF that not only plans the work, but monitors the work of the employees. He's got an office there, but he's also in the field with them on the tracks performing, looking at them performing the work.
And is this, and this 10% number, is this a case, I assume it's done through sampling, just similar to, okay, great. Right. And is this a case, again, of a broad matrix of training materials and that they just simply hadn't gotten to them yet?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we're talking a large number of courses. Some of them are technical, some of them are health and safety related. And in this particular case, they had taken the vast majority of courses. The, in general terms, the maintenance vehicle technician training was more advanced than any of the others that I had seen. So they had really, there was only two employees out of the 20 that were missing a couple of courses that weren't technical. They were more sort of broad health and safety.
And I note that you obviously have a remediation plan that all STEM and RTG or RTM have a remediation plan. So I would assume that I can expect in the next you know, annual report, or hopefully if we get a mid-year update in September, that we would see that these employees have taken all of their required courses.
Yeah, I mean, as a point of clarification, as I said, the priority of the RMCO is to monitor the six key risk areas. We've monitored four. And not only is the monitoring done for each of these risk areas, in this particular case, track, LRVs, and catenary, but we also look at it from a multifaceted point of view, so documentation, processes, training, and execution. And the reason for that, as I explained, is to give the city, the Transit Commission, City Council, a clear picture of compliance, not only that, you know, the requirements are implemented on a piece of paper, but they're actually out there. So short answer is, this year my focus will be on the two broad risk areas that have not been monitored so far, but we will come back to LRVs and track and catenary. And when I do that, of course, top of mind, front and center, will be those areas of non-compliance, as well as other areas, because, I mean, every field is very broad. So if you look at human factors, as an example, that we monitored in the fall of 2019, we looked at training. That's the foundation of any safe operation. But that was really about the employees involved in the movement of LRVs and trains. So we looked at operators, we looked at hostlers, so different groups of employees here. But when we come back to the human factors piece, we're going to look at that training, but we may also look at other areas such as hours of service and fatigue and medical fitness for duty and that kind of thing. So, you know, short answer is yes, it will be done. It's going to be done on a risk-based, prioritized basis, but there is some focus and monitoring and prioritization, not only on the areas where we have findings, but also we remain connected with emergent information. So as an example, I'm constantly reviewing, you know, the types of issues that are being faced out in the field, so that as part, one of the inputs in the decision as to what will be monitored next is not only the research and of commuter services worldwide and data and the regulations, but also real life service experience that helps us focus on those areas that have the most impact.
Thank you. That is very helpful. My last question is that, you know, I note throughout the report that there's opportunities or partial compliances with respect to record keeping, right? So we're talking about track inspections, as Councillor McKinney was asking about, that only 60% of the inspections were recorded. And there's other areas as well throughout the report that talks about some spottiness in the record keeping. Is this something in your experience as both, you know, a professional in this field as well as being our compliance officer, is this something that we should be concerned about, that the record keeping seems to be perhaps not on par with others?
Yeah, I'll start off by mentioning, like I did earlier, that the RMCO monitors compliance and reports back to the city, does not investigate the causes. So I didn't drill down as to why they missed those specific ones. I will tell you, though, that based on my experience, that documentation and record keeping is a challenge for a lot of operations.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are my questions. Thank you, Mr. Barata.
Thank you, Commissioner. Councillor Egli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting me pop in, so to speak, to the Commission today. Mr. Barata, I've got a couple of questions for you. First off, early on in your presentation, you talked about how OC and the city had invested in tech that you hadn't seen in a lot of other operations in terms of overall safety. And then, but the examples you gave us, I didn't really see as tech. I saw, you talked about lack of level crossings, which is obviously a good thing, and the fact that the lines aren't shared with other vehicles that may be carrying hazardous goods and what have you. But can you give us a couple examples of again, I don't consider that tech. I consider good things, but not tech so far. Are there tech solutions that we have in place, programs or what have you that you have seen that you haven't seen other places that you think are an enhancement to the line?
Thank you, Mr. Aglai. I gave three examples. You're absolutely right. You know, the kind of things that are challenges for many railway operations, including passenger and commuter crossings and, shared trackage are big ones. But I did also talk about communication-based train control system, which is highly technological. You may have read that railways in North America invested billions of dollars to provide their rail operations with something they call PTC. This is something that is mandatory in the US. It's not mandatory yet in Canada. But what it does, as I said, someone who is operating a train in most operations is going to be tasked with the necessity to monitor signal indications to identify what they mean and to take the necessary action to either slow down or stop the movement. And this is one of the issues that's on the TSB watch list. So if you read the TSB website and, you know, you look at what's top of mind for them on railways, this is a big one. It has been for years, because you have accidents that happen with signal indications that are not abided by. And this is not only in Canada and the US, this is all over the world. And I've done some research in Europe and other countries, and same thing. So the city has invested in this very sophisticated communication-based train control system, which, as I said, is designed to have positive control over the movements.
Thank you for that. On a more operational piece, your role is somewhat unique. You're kind of in a silo. You're not with OC Transpo. You're not with Alstom or RTG, but you have to work with all those groups. And in compiling this report and in carrying on your daily duties, have you encountered any challenges with any of those parties that you have to deal with, either in terms of not being provided with timely information when requested, not being allowed site visits if that's necessary, not having allowed access to employees to ask questions of and seek information? Have you experienced any roadblocks or issues in that regard? And if so, how have you addressed them? Or, what are you looking at to sort of fix those operational pieces so that your audit report comes forward in a more fluid fashion if you, in fact, are experiencing those difficulties?
Thank you for the question. So short answer is no roadblocks. The monitoring, as I said earlier, has encompassed a significant amount of scope in 2020. The level of cooperation has been good from all parties. Challenges that we faced, I think we've all faced them in COVID-19. We have found ways to work around those issues through technology, as we're doing right now. Field visits have to be done at a certain distance from individuals with the proper PPE, but we have been able to overcome those challenges.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Commissioner Kavanaugh, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask more about the training, and it was touched on that this was a lot to do with health and safety training. Is this something that takes a long time to do? What is the reason it might have been not done in a more expedient way? And also, is there tests for this training?
Yeah, short answer is that, the first point I'll make, as I said, is that I don't, as the RMTO, do not investigate on the causes as to why the noncompliance has been identified. I will make the comment, like I did before, that, you know, this is the early stages of an operation, employees being hired, a very extensive training matrix identifying a large number of courses. Yes, there are tests on the courses that we reviewed. So I don't want to speculate as to why all the courses weren't delivered, but we need to retain perspective by recognizing that, you know, it's so from a long-term perspective, all those courses are a requirement. That's what ALSTM wants. That's what RTM wants, and I think that's what the city wants as well. Having said that, about prioritization, getting employees up to speed, some of it is about learning in action. This is part of any operation. I was involved myself in significant training initiatives in my previous capacity, and there's always a classroom component, there's a field component, and then there's a learning in action component. So my sense is that they need to formalize that and sequence their courses to start with the most impactful, the most important ones, and then move on.
So are they generally done in-house, that the training would be something that needs to be set up in-house, or is it outside agencies?
From what I've seen, they have trainers that work for ALSTM and RTM. Some of those trainers are external parties. I can't give you a total picture of all their trainers, but that's what I've seen.
I just wonder if this is the reason why, if there's any, if it makes it more complicated to get the training. I just want to know how accessible it is generally.
Yeah, from what I've seen, they've got access to, you know, a variety of contractors and people. As I said, some of them are internal. And it may have been more, I don't want to speculate here, but it may have been more an issue of, you know, the sequencing of the courses before putting the people in the operation. But again, I'll come back to that training matrix, which is quite elaborate. You know, if you've got, let's say, 25 courses that need to be delivered, after, let's say, a year that the employee's been hired, I think you need to identify in there which ones are essential before even allowing an employee to be out in the field with a more experienced person. And that's the part that was missing. And that's the part that they've clarified, which should give us a clearer picture of expectations as to which course, if you see somebody in the field, which of those courses in the training matrix must be a check beside them.
And they're breaking new ground because this is a unique system, or is it standard stuff for rail?
Well, clearly this is very sophisticated equipment, very sophisticated technologies. Some of the courses that are required that are being taken by ALSTM and RTM employees are, for example, operating rules for the Confederation Line, which is a requirement that comes from the city. So they're delivering that. Having said that, there's very, very technical courses on how to inspect all those hundreds and thousands of components in the LRVs and the catenary. And those are courses that go hand in hand with technical documents that typically come from, you know, the ALSTM and the manufacturers of components.
And these are primarily mechanics that are taking these courses. This is the job categories, all related to people who.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, they're just saying that they're related to those that work directly on the ground.
Indeed. So, you know, three types of employees. We've got the guideway technicians that are doing track inspections as well as maintenance. We've got the power technicians that are doing the inspection and maintenance on the catenary. And we have the maintenance vehicle technicians that are performing the work on the LRVs. So they're all in different places doing different things, but they're all in the field.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Barada, if I may, you note in your report that there are some areas that are partially compliant and opportunities for improvement, but you didn't list any area that is non-compliant. Is that correct? But that is something that you could designate if you find it to be in non-compliance?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct. So as I said earlier, the lowest level of compliance is not compliant, and there were none of those.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your presentation today. Okay, Commission, the recommendation is that the Transit Commission recommend Council receive the Light Rail Regulatory Monitor and Compliance Officer Annual Report attached as Document 1. Is that recommendation carried?
Carried.
Carried.
Thank you. Okay, this item, by the way, will be considered at Council, as Mr. Barada said, on April 14th. So our next item up is the Transit Services 2021 Business Plan and Reporting on 2020 Business Plan. There's no presentation. We do have one delegation, Carrie Glynis Elliott. Do you see her there, Eric?
Yes, Chair, she should be coming online now.
Okay, thank you. Whenever you're ready, Carrie.
Hi, am I unmuted?
We hear you.
Good. Okay, thank you for letting me speak to this. I had a good look at the business plan. I thought it was very, very interesting. I have a few questions about it. One of the themes that I'm noticing is, well, let me explain. I'm Carrie Glynis Elliott from the Ottawa Transit Riders. And one of the things that we have been working on is we've been working to get members of the community to talk about improving public transit in the city of Ottawa. And one of the themes that we've been noticing is a big disconnect between what OC Transpo and the city does and what community members would like to see. So I had a good look at this business plan. There are some very, very interesting things in there. I'm very happy to see, for example, that paratranspo is mentioned. I'd like to see that bumped up as a priority. I like the fact that there's a working group because I think it's very important to be talking about users of para, about what they'd like to see. There are a few things that I would like to see more community involvement in. For example, there's a section there on performance measurement and indicators. And there's not a lot of details in this business plan, but what I would formally like is I would like the city and OC Transpo to consult with community members, with groups like the Ottawa Transit Riders, Healthy Transportation Coalition, Ecology Ottawa, Free Transit Ottawa, about what kind of things matter to transit riders. Because we have a saying in economics that the only things we value are the things we can measure. And so when you're creating performance measurement, if you're only measuring the things that OC Transpo thinks are easy to measure or that OC Transpo is going to do well at, you're not necessarily measuring the most important things. I'd really like to have a meeting, a consultation with transit riders who can say, these are the things that we would like to see measured and we would like to see them looked at. Things like being on time, things like communication, that sort of thing. So that's one of my requests. The second thing I want to talk about is the working group on affordable transit. Our group was one of the groups that called for this at a Transit Commission meeting in, I believe it was November 2019. We said this seemed like a really good idea to have a working group to discuss how to make transit affordable, particularly for low-income residents. Our idea, though, was that it would include City of Ottawa, OC Transpo, and members of the community. And members of the community have been completely shut out of this working group. I'd like to know what the mandate of the working group is. I'd like to know who the members are. I'd like to formally ask, is it possible to have members of the community involved in this working group? And the reason that I'm asking this, is that I'm seeing where people are talking a bit about a democratic deficit in the city of Ottawa, where there's this conflict. What happens is that a small group of people sit around a table and they come up with a proposal without consulting with the people who are actually using the service. And they present the proposal and people from the community say, no, that's not what we want. No, we're not happy with this. And then people on the Transit Commission get angry and get defensive and they say, ah, these people aren't happy. And I think, you know, there's a better way of doing this. There's definitely a better way of doing this. We could start with consultations from the very beginning where people who ride transit and have interest in the community say, this is what we want. And OC Transpo and the city work with us to make these things work. So that's really what I would like to see. So the two things that I'm really asking about are, can we have some input into the performance measurement indicators? And can we have members on the working group? That's all I have to say. I really hope that we get working together because all of us in this particular meeting want transit to be better. And I think that whatever we do to sort of ratchet down the conflict would be really good. So I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's a couple of questions for you, Councillor Meehan.
Actually, Chair, it's not a question for our presenter. It's a question that I would like to ask later on some another topic in this on this item, this agenda item.
Okay. Well, you had your hand up for the delegate. That's why I called on you. Okay. Commissioner Caricato, please.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for being here. I'm one of the citizen commissioners on the FAIRS working group. So if you want to meet offline and discuss, I'm happy to make myself available and bring your concerns forward through that mechanism. And we can also discuss performance measurement at the same time if you wish. Just want to put that out there.
Thank you very much for that offer, and I might well take you up on that. I do think, however, that the Transit Commission as a whole would probably function a lot better if it were just a little bit more open to community members. We have a lot of people in the community who are very, very invested in public transit and want a say in the matter. They can't necessarily be elected officials, and they don't necessarily work for OC Transpo. So I would like an opportunity other than the once a month Transit Commission meetings where we sign up as delegates and simply have 5 minutes to speak. I would like a bit more of an opportunity for members of the community to be involved very early on in the stage, at the proposal stage and at the consultation stage. But thank you for that offer.
Is that it, Commissioner?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Carrie, you're aware we have four citizen members, four citizen commissioners, right? Okay.
Four people out of the whole city, please. Though.
Councillor Cavanaugh?
Thank you. Carrie, thank you for coming out and speaking as a transit user. Is there a question that we can put to staff today, since you're here? We can ask questions to staff while we're here. So is there a opening question that I can ask to them?
Well, yes, there is a question, although I don't think they could answer right off the bat, regarding performance measurement indicators. I'd like to know what those indicators are, because the business plan simply said there were going to be indicators established. It didn't actually say what those indicators were. So, for example, if you ask transit riders might say, for example, that on-time accurate communication is a really high priority for them. I'm wondering if that's one of the indicators that will be measured. So that's my question would be, what are the indicators and how do they decide what the indicators would be and how they'd be measured?
Okay. Thank you very much.
I believe that report was dealt with at the last commission meeting, and there was a list provided of what areas we're looking at doing performance measures. And next up is Councillor Brockington. He may want to speak to that because he also offered some very good suggestions towards those measures. So it's already taken place with the community consultation piece. Commissioner Brockington, sorry, if you'd like to go ahead.
Chair, you hit the nail right on the head. I just wanted to inform our delegate exactly what you said. At last month's meeting, we had an extensive discussion on our new performance metric system that's going to be used. And if Ms. Elliott, I'm sure Ms. Elliott would like a copy of that. If OC Transpo can provide her with a summary, I think that would help her.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Brockington. Next up is Councillor McKinney.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for coming out, Carrie. It's always good to see you. I certainly don't disagree with you that having more members of the public on any working group. I sit on two right now. I'm sitting on another one, actually, that Councillor Eglai is chairing. And having members of the public who have a certain expertise, insight, is invaluable, really. So it is something that I'll commit to raising. I think that there is still can be a way where we can pull in user groups, people who use transit regularly, frequently. That's the way they get around to ensure that, you know, the direction that we're headed in as a working group is certainly in line with what's required in from the public. So thank you for coming out. I appreciate it. We do miss these things. I have to admit to that. The working group came out. I was very pleased to be asked to sit on it. You know, it has been approved by commission, by council. We've gone through that. But I don't think things need to be set in stone, and it is something I'll commit to raising. So thank you for coming out.
Thank you, Councillor. So that's the end. Thank you, Carrie, for your delegation. That's appreciated. So we'll now turn to questions of staff from commission members first, and then any councillors joining us. Commissioner Wright Gilbert.
Twice in one meeting, I get to go first. Must be the luck of the Irish. I only have one question. So on page 6 of the business plan and reporting, it talks about paratranspo online services. I'm wondering, it lays out what staff is actually going to deliver in 2021. I'm just wondering if we can get a little bit more specificity with respect to the full suite of online booking systems and when an enhanced functionality for paratranspo, when is that going to be available to our paratranspo customers?
I'll ask Mr. Scrimger to update us.
Thanks.
Thanks, John. Yes, Mr. Chair, we've been testing the, so first of all, the online ability to book or cancel a trip has been in place for a little over a year now. We introduced it initially as a web form until we could get the full suite of online services working. That full set has been in testing with a group of customers since late last year. And we're, you know, we've been getting a lot of value out of that testing, a lot of internal testing as well, upgrading the core software in which this all runs. The four main parts of that are going to be the ability to book a trip, including some, not just putting in a request, but getting some live feedback that there will be, you are confirming a trip at that time, the ability to cancel the trip if you no longer have to make that trip, the ability to track the vehicle that's assigned to bring you, to pick you up and take you to your destination, and the ability to manage your account with Paratranspo. And we're getting closer, and I think we'll be able to brief the commission within the next 2 or 3 months on a start date of all those services.
So from this, and thank you for the information, Mr. Scrimger, as always, it's helpful to have a little bit more context. So from the sounds of it, if you're briefing the commission in the next 2 or 3 months in terms of a start date, we're likely not looking at a start date of the full suite of online booking systems enhanced functionality until at least summer, late summer of this year, perhaps fall. Would that be a fair assumption?
We're optimistic that we'll be much sooner than that.
Okay. All right. It's just I've had several questions from para customers that reached out to me about when this full suite of programs is going to be available or services is going to be available, and I want to be able to provide them with a instead of a soon an actual date. So I look forward to hearing more about when para customers can expect this full suite of systems. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my question.
Thank you. Next up is Commissioner Caricato, please.
Thank you. I like the plan. I like what I'm reading in here. I would appreciate a bit more detail, out of curiosity, I guess, about the marketing and advertising to build ridership. And if you can today sort of outline what that looks like in broad terms.
So if we step back pre-COVID, there was always a thought, a strong thought, that we needed to launch the rail line and then go very, very aggressively on marketing and advertising to continue to build on what was then, you know, very good ridership. COVID has reinforced that even more so. And we want to do some aggressive, and I don't like the term marketing and advertising, but that's what it is. But some, you know, what's going to drive the ridership back in whatever form it comes back in? We need some key decisions made so that we can shape that. We need to know what the federal government is doing, the timing on that. We need to know what the universities are doing on that. Because without that line of sight, and I don't have line of sight, we keep asking, we don't know exactly when they're coming and things keep shifting with the vaccination and so forth. We can't really build a construct on that, but this is about doing what many councillors and commissioners talked about during, you know, the launch of the LRT line and post-launch and so forth. It's all of that. I think what COVID has brought to the table is this is going to be a new way of doing this. It's, you know, the conventional marketing and advertising campaign won't just work. It's got to be much more than that. It's got to layer in that layer of cleanliness. It's got to layer in that layer of inner commute. It's got to layer in a whole bunch of things around special events. You know, we used to have massive uptake on the special events programs. We want to drive those customers back into the system and so forth. So it's multifaceted. And there are a lot of variables, Commissioner, and there's going to be some deep thinking we're going to need to think to do on that and step outside the box.
Yeah, I think highlighting the service reliability that we're consistently seeing now would be a good start, since that's sort of where we left off pre-COVID. Looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with. On page 16, at the very top, the first sentence kind of caught me off guard. This is about, I guess, the on-demand transit that we're learning about. And it says, as a condition of provincial funding to replace lost fare revenue resulting from the pandemic, the city's required to evaluate the applicability of microtransit in the OC Transpo system. So because this is the first I've heard of conditions, I guess, coming from the province concerning transit funding, are there other conditions that the province is requiring?
There's full auditing requirements, but on the microtransit piece, I know Councillor Meehan has been sharing her thoughts on that, and we're aligned to that. We are totally open to that. We have for years. Microtransit is getting a lot of attention now because there's a lot of vendors that know about this clause on the funding. And where our head's at is absolutely there's a space for that. First mile, last mile is where we need to go when we go, recover our ridership and so forth. And so, I just caution it all looks new. It's there's new packaging around it. There's some great innovation that's occurring out there, but we are, just to be clear, we're totally on for it. And we were studying it even before it became a condition of this piece. And there is a space for this in our network. You're one of the largest geographical cities that you serve transit on. And, Councillor Meehan, absolutely, first mile, last mile. We don't have to be everything to everybody. And so it'll be there. But Commissioner Caricato, this is a condition of the provincial funding. And then the rest are pretty generic in terms of auditing, and it shall only be used for COVID measures and so forth and things like that.
Okay, thanks. Next question is about GPS tracking. It was mentioned once, I think, on page 17, but I was hoping I'd see more of that in the business plan for the year ahead. Can you speak about GPS tracking, where we're at, where we're going this year?
Certainly. I'm going to turn over to Pat. And the one thing Pat does, he's a humble leader. He doesn't brag enough. His mission is crystal clear. I told him coming out of COVID, just like on our fair payment system, the expectations of the customers is totally different than pre-COVID, just like your shopping experience has changed. So this space, Councillor Kavanaugh has been pushing hard. The chair has been pushing hard. You have, Commissioner. Pat's mission is come out of COVID, where people can track anything, anywhere. And that's what he's pushing hard on. And he's doing some great work in this space. Pat, could you comment on this?
Sure. GPS, we have GPS tracking on all of our bus, all of our rubber tired vehicles, paratranspo buses and full-size buses. Trains are tracked through the CBTC control system. So that tracking is available to our control staff, and it's available for any emergency response required. We also use that GPS tracking as an input to the next stop predictions that we publish that are picked up by many apps and published. And we talked I think it was last commission meeting about the new API that we've got, the next version of it that is capable of feeding more robust, more precise information out to those apps. And what's coming soon is introducing our new central dispatch system, which is replacing a life expired system. The new one that comes does better predictions, more robust, more solid predictions, especially towards the beginning of routes. And that the new API, the API 2.0, allows us, we have to clear that obstacle with all of the app developers before we can introduce the new control system and publish better data to them. So it's a little better right now. It's just a little more stable, but within the next few months, that better data comes from the control system. But I want to reinforce that's not about GPS tracking. That's about prediction of the vehicle arrival time at the stop where a customer is waiting.
Okay, great. I think we can all recall of situations where we're waiting for a bus. I've experienced it. I know others have too, where you see the bus on your app and it's coming, it says 2 minutes away, and then all of a sudden it disappears and you're back to, 14 minutes. And so if we can improve that, and it sounds like we're working towards that, then I'm happy. Next question, I guess, is one that I've brought up before. It relates to number 8 on the plan, O-Train Line 1 station improvements, electronic signage outside of O-Train stations. Is that something we're continuing to look into?
Yeah, we're continuing to do. We've got the first signs at the entrances of stations going up at Rideau Station within the next little while, and we'll be continuing to roll those out. It wasn't possible to incorporate that work into the main contract with RTG because of the nature of how that construction was being done, so it's all being done as a retrofit. But the footings are in. If you go by the east entrance to Rideau Station, you can see the footings now, and the signs will be in soon. Now that the weather's getting better, it'll be easier to do that work.
So when you're approaching Tunney's Pasture, for example, you'll be able to see the next train is in 3 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever, but it won't be that long. But yeah, before you get down and pay your fare and make the decision to go in the station.
That's right. And, one of the big things that we'll be doing is if there is any modification to service or any disruption to service, it'll be displayed on that screen, just as it is displayed right now on the screens that are inside the stations. We'll be able to display it on the screen outside the station so that a customer who is walking to the station but isn't checking Twitter has another way of being aware.
Great. And when can we expect all stations to have electronic signage outside?
I don't have a date for that yet. It's going to be an ongoing piece of work.
Okay. Thanks so much. That's all my questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Vice Chair Kluche, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for this report. I have more of perhaps a less of a question, but more of a comment for your consideration. The Keeping You Safe campaign was launched as a result of COVID and is targeted to those who are already on transit. And page 8 of this report speaks about the business plan to install the installation of 1,200 signs in stations, 700 on trains, 5,100 signs on buses and signs on paratranspo minibuses. Those who are seeing those ads are indeed our transit. They are on our transit system and important to keep informed. But in the coming months, as we enter the post-COVID environment, I'd like to hear from our comms team how we would encourage people, how we can pivot that messaging to a wider community and welcome transit riders back to public transit and welcoming them back, perhaps using the Keeping You Safe or Safer key messages. But to do this, we should explore other communication channels that are outside our transit to reach those who are not currently on transit. So I just like your thoughts, your comments, and your assurance that we will be reaching outside of our system to welcome people back on transit.
Vice Chair, absolutely. And that speaks to the earlier question about advertising and promotion. I think we can all attest that it's information overload right now to people. The facts are 3 worldwide studies that transit is not a transmitter of COVID. That's been scientifically proven over and over. We're going to take all that as part of that, return the ridership people back. It's a question of timing. I look to Dr. Etches, who's been a great, great partner and a great advisor at weaving that piece in. She's been so supportive of what we've done. And I think to your point, exactly, it's got to go outside the normal channels that we use.
Thank you, Mr. General Manager. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président. That's all my questions and comments.
Thank you, Vice Chair. So next up is Councillor Brockington, please.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to staff for putting this together, both giving us an update on the 2020 plan and their vision for 2021. Previous comments about paratranspo from 2020, in that report on page 6, you talk about what you'd like to do in 2021, particularly the delivery of the full suite of the online booking system and enhanced functionality of for paratranspo customers. Is this not identified as a 2021 main project because it's a carryover from 2020 and you're just continuing with that work?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And again, this is a compliment to Pat. He doesn't brag enough. He's doing some amazing stuff with the paratranspo group. He's got a bunch of updates coming to you via memo and so forth. So yes, Commissioner, the pair working group is doing great work. And then the day-to-day group, customer service group, has been doing some great outreach with customers.
Okay, I didn't want para riders or advocates to assume that we're not making this an equal priority, that it's not losing any steam. It sounds like there's great work going on. So I just wanted to reinforce that with them. I think whether we make it a priority or not, you're still going to put exactly the same effort into it to getting this done. So your response today provides me comfort and I won't be amending anything in that regard. I just wanted to comment, Chair, about item 5, which is the performance measurement and reporting system, which we endorsed just a month ago. I just want to reinforce that Mr. Scrimger acknowledged that this was sort of our first attempt to identify performance measurement. We will have an opportunity, perhaps in 1 year's time, to reflect on the variables, and there may be an opportunity to revise them. So I just want to leave the door open that once we start to get data and we start to better understand the metrics that are in place and we look at that, that we may want to tweak it. So I just want to leave that door open later in this year. And finally, for 2021, again, I'm fine with the plan that's been proposed. I do have a few questions. One is regarding the bus barriers that were ultimately approved by council late in the year. Mr. Manconi, I'm a little hesitant with going to a sole source contract, although I sense your urgency to get this done, and certainly our employees, our representatives want to see this done as quickly as possible as well. Have we used our time well since council made the decision in December to get this up and running?
Excellent timing. I just got an update from Mr. Greer yesterday. I believe he's tracking to end of summer to get things done. And he worked with Will McDonald, our chief procurement officer, who's here for the other report. They basically went and negotiated with our bus suppliers. So we didn't go sole source per se. We went with the Nova Bus and with the New Flyer bus companies and got some very good pricing. And more importantly, an accelerated timeline. So that's, Jim, I think I've got it right. I think you said yesterday, end of summer is kind of what you're tracking to in terms of having the entire fleet done. And it comes off in increments of 20 or so on a regular cycle. So they've got an acceleration plan.
And all within budget.
Mr. Greer is under budget right now, and Mr. Greer watches the bottom line very, very well. I think he will come in under or at budget, worst case scenario, but right now it's tracking to under budget.
Okay, good. Mr. Manconi, can you talk about the bus system overall? And I'll give you some context. After the LRT line opened, we had a challenging winter, not just because of the challenges on the Confederation line, but the bus service in particular was very challenged for reliability. And maybe a lot of that was due to the scarcity of drivers that you had and the challenges to fill holes. My concern is this, that when our transit service returns to, let's just say, normal capacity, it needs to run smoothly. We can't go back to the challenges that we had pre-COVID. I'm confident the LRT line will be obviously much stronger. The reliability now is performing well. But what assurances can you give the Transit Commission that the challenges we were having with the bus system as recently as a year ago will have been addressed and much better service when we get our numbers back?
No, it's an important question. So if we go back when we launched, you know, we had that great September, no rail issues, and then things got very challenging. And you remember, we did two things. We launched a train system and we redid your entire bus route system. So 1,000 buses, 190 routes. That's important to put it in perspective. You know, 350,000 people a day is what you're moving. And you recall, they were constantly pulling buses off to do the R1 because there were so many interruptions. So number one, you've seen the metrics. We haven't done an R1 save and except the other day for a short period of time in a long, long time. So that's increased reliability. But the other thing is you added 40 buses as floaters because we were drawing capacity to do some tweak. That 40 is not in your base budget right now. That was part of the solutions we brought forward to you. But we're confident that the 190 routes are stable, that they're robust, that the reliability, if it stays at that 98%, they all go together as an integral piece. But there's things that we need to watch for. Return of ridership will come with many different elements. Some people, you know, there's already surveys out there. Some people are going to wait a long time before they jump on a public transit vehicle. That may increase your street traffic, which may cause congestion issues. So I can never sit here and say 100%, but we were doing very well when we did those extra 40 buses. High 90s in terms of percentage of service out. Our workforce, we've used this time to staff up. We're at a good staff complement, a good spare board complement, you know, hence my reluctance to do deep cuts. Now we've got service adjustments coming to you as you've requested. So that's coming forward soon. And you know, vaccine keeps changing and so forth. So there's a lot of pieces to that puzzle, but it was running well before COVID struck. And our mission is to do exactly what you're suggesting, Councillor Brockington.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. My last question is the upgrades to some of the LRT stations, item 8. You've noted Blair and Tunney's Pasture in particular. Can you just talk about Herdman Station and the upgrades you've already done. There's covered walkway that leads from the main station westbound to all the bus stops. Is there anything planned to upgrade the actual LRT station to better protect passengers from the elements?
40 seconds left.
At LRT, Councillor? At Herdman, sorry?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's no immediate plans to modify the station. I know you've talked about winds and so forth there. That's one of the stations that's elevated there. You know, as development occurs around there, I think things will improve. But there's no immediate plans to do any retrofits to that station.
Okay, it's the north-facing staircase that's completely exposed, and the concern was to have snow, ice on the stairs while people were traveling up and down.
Yes.
Again, I'm not going to amend the plan, but I just want to say that is still a matter that a number of my residents who use Herdman Station raised with me. Chair, I will be supporting the recommendation for the 2021 work plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Brockington. That's much appreciated. Next up is Councillor Kavanaugh, please.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that the issue was raised about GPS. I think that's really, really important. And Mr. Scrimger and I have talked before the meeting as well. So look forward to it. Hope to have some dates of when it'll get started. So when we can have that information, I'll be very happy. The other things I want to talk about is just transit fare in general. I guess we have to be really open-minded in terms of wooing people back. It won't be what it looked like before. Have we thought about making other kinds of arrangements? Like, you know, people aren't going to travel every single day. They're not likely to buy monthly passes anymore. What are we looking at in terms of other options to get people back into ridership? Because it's going to be different. As you said, Mr. Manconi, they're going to, you know, just take their time, and maybe they'll go once or twice a week. What can we do to, is there something that's being looked at in that respect?
Two things there, Councillor Kavanaugh. The first goes back to Commissioner Catercato's question about, you know, what's that marketing and advertising campaign look like? Whether or not council wants to look at fair offsets and so forth, that we need direction from council on that as part of that work. The one thing we are doing is, again, I want to go back to our fair payment system. And that's why, you know, I like to brag a little bit about it, a lot about it, because it's one of the best out there. And one of the things it's going to enable you to do is do some fare capping functionality down the road if you want to do that. Better initiatives on multi-passes and so forth. Pay any way you want. The message on our fare system is going to be there's no wrong door. You can pay any way you want, and then there's flexibility down the road if there's a fare policy discussion that people want to have or that council wants to have in that regard. So flexibility is the key.
Yeah, definitely. And we heard from a member of Transit Rider Group about being involved. Is it possible to bring in some of these groups in terms of consulting with them?
Councillor, the short answer is we'll meet with anyone. And, you know, we've met with many of the speakers that we've heard, including the one today. The challenge, I'm going to be candid here with commission is, number one, we have zero capacity to add any more projects. I'm being candid with that. And the city, I have the full city manager's support. We had lengthy discussions. We've just been through a worldwide pandemic. I'm proud, you know, this team doesn't brag enough. They've delivered on every single thing in 2020, and we've got a very aggressive plan for 2021, and we kept service running. The issue where we get frustrated is I can't sit in a room and have a no fare policy discussion. That is not our place. That is your place. And I think we as staff are frustrating some of the speakers that come and say, well, you know, for example, you should go to no fares. And my short answer is that's not our mandate. Council has given us a mandate, and the fares are the fares. And so we will meet with anyone. And, you know, when people come to this commission, my door is wide open. As you know, I've met with many, many, and will continue. but I also deliver, you're the bosses. We're not the bosses. We're here to execute on your plans. And I think we're frustrating them. I'm just being candid with you on that. We'll meet with anybody. I don't think we need massive meetings, but we're here to help people out. We want riders to be content and satisfied and safe and all those things. But on some of the asks, I simply, we're handcuffed and I have no capacity. This team is exhausted to add more to the work plan. I'm being candid with you, Councillor Kavanaugh, as I know I can.
Yep, you can. We've lost millions of dollars. People aren't riding the buses. We're going to continue to lose millions if we don't move them back to some extent. But price point does make a difference. Price point, if you're going to try and get someone back, I think it would be a good idea to look at. And I sure hope the transit group looks at that. I also want to ask about gender lens. If that is being looked at as well when we talk about the transit group and who our customers are and what we're doing for them.
100%, Councillor. Every one of these, we've adopted the equity inclusion lens many years ago, and it is applied to every single project on all these initiatives.
Thank you. One of the things I would encourage is help for those who travel with children. I know that that's something I've heard. Is when people are trying to use bus service and their families. And I think I'd like to see that, to see more families using the bus service. If we could make some arrangements for families, i.e. Make it so that, you bring, you're paying for everyone and it's a better arrangement. So you're encouraging people to take transit with their kids, to take them places. I know Councillor Brockington has done some stuff for special occasions, but I'm hearing from people that would really help them. And I think that it's kind of a gender issue too, in terms of helping people get to childcare and schools and things like that. So I hope we'll consider that because I hear that as something that would be helpful. In terms of the and working with some of the groups who've raised issues with us, such as Cowie, which we've worked with very closely on gender issues. Has anything been considered in those regards?
Some quick comments come to mind. First and foremost, Pat's implemented the Family Day Pass initiative. Again, the payment system will enable a bunch of options in that regard. One of the things, and I'm hoping on recovery of COVID, tracking ridership, pre-COVID, pre-rail launch, we met with museums, art galleries, and so forth, and we said, hey, be a partner with us and do a family package when you're buying your tickets. Build it right into the booking of your online ticket. That was a challenge for many of them because of technology. Now with the rapid deployment of technology, I think there'll be a lot of uptake that when you're booking your a family day at the museum, which got a discounted rate on a certain day, you can buy your OC Transfo family pass at a discounted rate. We're all on for those types of things. And it's not just from those that can afford it, but also for those that are challenged in that regard in terms of other initiatives that we can do. So everything's on the table, Councillor, in terms of attracting our community to transit in every way.
And I just want to say, in terms of our current low-income passes, I appreciate that we've not raised them, that we've not allowed them to go up in price, and that's really important, especially right now. I couldn't think of a better time to keep them from being raised. But I appreciate that we do have to look at making it easier for people of low income, because I hear concerns about filling out paperwork and just having access to it and figuring out what kind of pass they can have. These are all things that are another barrier for them getting on and using transit. So I hope that something's being done on that end. I saw that was part of what has been reported, but in what your comments. So I think that is a big deal in terms of the paperwork that is required to get these passes. We need to get away from that. So I appreciate looking at that. I'm interested in the micro transit. I think I have a lot of questions on it. My concern is how that affects our employees right now. Like, I just don't want to go to an Uber style where we have two classes of employees. That concerns me. If we even considered that, so we have a very good system, good transit union, and so that's one of the things that I'd like to know about is how such a
20 seconds left.
So, Councillor, you're absolutely right. Microtransit is not a contracting out of our transit services. I'll say that flat out. It's not a substitute for the great bus systems you have. You know, with the utmost respect of the agency that's talking about microtransit, I'll put it all in perspective. They have 10 routes. You have 190 routes. They got 16 vehicles. You have 900 vehicles. They have 4,200 passengers a day. You have 350,000 passengers a day. And they had some bus routes that they just simply didn't have the ridership on. And yes, they went to an on-demand service. You used to have one years ago. It was called Dial Bus, by the way. Those of you that remember it served parts of Nepean, parts of Orleans, and so forth. And it was, you know, smaller buses that would come out and pick you up. You've grown beyond that. Now, where does microtransit fit into your space? If you want to see where it's working well, go to Denver. Last mile, first mile. They've done partnerships where if you're trying to get to the nearest transfer station and you've got 2 kilometers or 2 miles that you don't want to walk or bike to, you can hook up with Uber or whoever you want and get there. And they have microtransit firms that will serve you and get you there. But to be clear, Councillor Cavan, I'm exactly with you. This is not about outsourcing OC Transpo. It's not about replacing high capacity bus service, which is what you run here in the nation's capital, highest ridership per capita in North America, but it has a place. And we will bring back to you those concepts, but it's not a substitute for conventional bus service. And it's not that we're opposed to it. And the union has spoken out. I don't blame them because they, you know, it could be, feel like we're going to outsource their jobs. That's not what this is about. It's to augment. And what you have done as a council, you've got the best MUP system being built with LRT. You've invested in massive cycling infrastructure at the LRT stations. You permit them on your trains. You promote walking, cycling, segregated bike lanes. This is another piece to getting people to those stations and to using a multimodal journey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Up next is Councillor McKinney.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of things. One, just on the microtransit, I also have concerns that I will be watching very closely. Mine relate to two-tier customers. You know, if part of our system becomes, you know, in any way privatized or changed, people, we know that we have two types of riders. We have riders who take the bus because best way for them to move about, to get to work. And then we have others who have absolutely no other option. And for those, the system can't become, they can't become more disadvantaged in this system. So I will be watching for that. That's all I'm going to say for now. But at this point, it's not something that I support. I've been I think pretty clear about that. My question is on, I see that in your business plan, which is a very good one, thank you. Number 9, rail simulator upgrades. I just noted that you'll be working to ensure that the simulator is an exact representation of both expanded rail lines, so stage 1 and stage 2. And I just wonder what the status is then of the training simulators today on stage 2. I don't recall if that was talked about in any detail at the FEDCO meeting when we got our update.
Yeah, no, Councillor, this is the part that reports to this committee. So I can't recall if you came for the tour. I know many of you tried out the simulators. If you go to our training facility now, you can drive the electric train, which is Confederation Line. You can drive the diesel train, the old ones that we had, which we're going to keep as part of the airport spur. You can drive buses and para vehicles. And so this upgrade gets the new Stadler vehicles, which is the diesel line, and any modifications that are done to the Alstom trains, which are would only be minor and cosmetic in nature. So they do the fit-ups for the Stadler vehicle for stage two, because stage two on the diesel line, you're running Stadler vehicles and also the Alstom vehicles.
And are we, are they on time right now, like for the Stadler vehicles? Like, will that hold up anything? We know that there's a delay. And is there a delay on the simulator for line two?
So the simulator, I'll answer the simulator part because that's not part of FEDCO. The simulator does not come from Stadler. So it's not part of the stage two construction contract. This comes from a software supplier called Octel. So it's not linked to the vehicle build out of stage two construction. This is from its software upgrades, screens, and they do a cab mock-up and so forth.
So am I to take from that you're not going to tell us whether it's on time or not? I have to wait.
The simulator is supposed to be on time. There's no issues with the simulator.
There's none on line two. So that's not holding up line one in any way. That's not holding up this objective, number nine in your business plan.
No, the simulator is on time. It's been planned out. It's being managed by the chief safety officer. You secured the funds. It's all moving. And Octel is our supplier. They know that they built that first one. So they're right in there. They know the whole configuration.
Okay.
Again, okay. Counselor, if you want to come over, I'll show you, I'll walk you through it and I'll show you what's involved anytime.
Okay. No, that's no, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll let you drive the train too.
Okay. I will come.
Anybody's welcome. It's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Meehan.
Hi. Thank you very much, Chair, and hi, everybody. Before I ask my question, I just want to clarify and hopefully allay fears of my council colleagues and the Transit Union ATU that what I have been calling for is not microtransit. I do not agree with microtransit, but I do like to propose macro transit, and it's a lot different than micro transit. So just bear that in mind as I ask my question, okay? And I'll explain it later if I have to. But I want to say, in my recent communications with Mr. Manconi and Mr. Scrimshire, I learned that OC Transpo Management had been in contact with at least one technology company about on-demand transit options. And I was gratified to learn that now that it's a directive from the provincial government's Safe Restart Program funding agreement. And I also welcome Mr. Manconi's comments this morning that there certainly is room for that within our city. I have since learned, since that conversation, that one technology company has offered to implement a small pilot project in Ottawa for a nominal amount to showcase the capabilities of a macro transit using app that would use our buses and our operators in designated areas. So that offer has been made to Ottawa. And this company is suggesting that a pilot project could be tested in a suburban area, either on evenings or on weekends. They just require some ridership data from Ottawa, which they are unable to get from our managers. I spoke to a company spokesperson just this morning, and they tell me they have been unable to connect with Mr. Scrimshire or anyone in transit planning since before Christmas. Their calls are just not being returned. So my question is, why has OC Transpo not responded to this very generous offer of a pilot project here in Ottawa to see how this could possibly work in our city? Other Canadian cities, and I know specifically Brampton, Hamilton, and Mississauga, have all called for RFPs for on-demand macro transit, again, using our buses and our operators, changing nothing about that, but putting a service in that could be more cost efficient here in Ottawa. So I want to know, like, what's the problem here?
Councillor, respectfully, there's no problem. I've talked to many of these companies, as is Mr. Scrimger, and the phone is ringing off the hook since the announcement that the province made. And it's even ringing more now that you've made your comments, which, again, I have no concerns with those. But a couple of things. They all want your data. They all will come in and do a pilot for you. There is staff capacity that we need to do. We need to do this well. They paint this rosy picture that they can come in and it's plug and play. It's not plug and play. And I can assure you, I'm sure you don't want me to just randomly pick any neighborhood. You want us to put together a plan. We want to put the equity inclusion lens. I don't arbitrarily just go pick a route. I'd have to write a report back to this commission and so forth. So I don't know who the company is that's saying that we're not returning calls. We've returned many, many calls. We've had meetings. And respectfully to the vendors, it's not complicated to understand. But we work for you. We don't work for the vendors. And they're all saying that they can do things literally and turn around on a dime. Well, we are in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. We are dealing with a very aggressive work plan that you've endorsed last year. It was not on our work plan. And there isn't capacity to just start meeting with random vendors, hearing how they can plug and play. Mr. Scrimger met with one vendor twice who had the exact same message to me, which, by the way, they said nominal cost. I said, do it for free. But once they met with Mr. Scrimger, he quickly explained to them, they thought they could do.
Have we had an offer though for a company to give us a small pilot project to see if this would work?
We've had companies that want to come in and do stuff for us.
A pilot project specifically, Mr. Benconi.
They basically say, we'll come in and do whatever you'd like us to do. Their message.
And how close are we to taking up what a company offer on this?
We're not. Because we put it on our work plan. That's what big organizations do. We table a work plan with our board of governors, yourselves, and it's part of our condition of funding. We have to do it. We will do it, and we will bring it to you. Now, if you want to give me a motion that says go do a pilot on a micro or macro transit or whatever terminology they choose to use, tell me where you'd like me to do it, what routes, what neighborhood, and what project comes off the list, because I can't do it right now. I have to bring to you the framework to do it and do it well.
I can understand that. But if you have a company that just needs some, say, ridership numbers from the suburbs, that we could, why wouldn't we just jump on this? Because we're losing so much money on running these empty buses right now. If we could run our buses with more people in them to where these people really want to go, it would increase ridership, increase fares, increase efficiency. Why would we not take a company up at this point just to figure out how this could possibly work for us? This is the time we have to do it. You know, and it's the perfect time to do it, to recreate our transit system. Yes, keep our fixed routes, keep our fixed buses, our fixed operators, but add to it, complement it with a different way to run our buses through community. I realize that it takes time, but I think, can we not maybe get a few dedicated people to work with even one company now? And I'm not proposing any particular company, but the technology exists now, that someone could go to a bus stop, order a bus, and the bus can show up, you know, within 5, 10, 15 minutes and get them exactly where they want to go. It exists. And it's not going to affect our drivers and it's not going to affect our buses. Why can't we do that? Make it a priority right now, because it's going to save us money and increase efficiency.
Councillor, we've met with 6 companies. There's a 7th booked. Nobody's given us a formal proposal.
I'm going to send you then the information that I received this morning from one particular company that proposes this, and they have not been heard from, they haven't heard back from OC Transpo.
Happy to meet with them when we have time, but in terms of what you're asking for, my answer is move a motion to give us direction on what neighborhood, what route, and by when, and then we'll take something off the work list to get it done.
Can I move a motion that does that today and without identifying a specific route, but we work with a company to identify that route given with our ridership numbers?
So you would like me to sole source with a company?
No, I would like to, if we could get it done for a small pilot project for a specific time that doesn't cost us anything, can we not do that? That does not commit us to actually signing a long-term contract with the company, but it gives us an idea of how this can work for us and maybe allay fears in the community and with the ATU.
Time.
Chair, if that is the direction of this committee, take something off the work list because we've given to you what we can do. And again, I have the full support of the city manager that we are maxed out on resources right now. We're dealing with a worldwide pandemic, including recovery, and including we're bringing you the service adjustments and framework for further service cuts. I do not have the dedicated one, and it's not one person. I can assure you it's more than one person. Councillor McKinney talked about equity. Councillor Kavanaugh talked about equity and inclusion. We got labor relations issues. We've got policies. You've got rules in terms of transit providers. There's a legal framework that you need to review. It's not just myself. The legal team will need to be engaged. And procurement in terms of how we're going to sole source this. So well, I'm in your hands, Chair.
I would just
thank you. Sorry, Councillor Meehan. He's asked me a question. We have a question to the chair from the staff, so if you don't mind. We're not going to do this as a direction today. As Mr. Manconi pointed out, what you're asking for is a sole source contract. So what I encourage you to do is we will work going forward with you on that. First, I saw your request was reading it in the paper today. Your earlier mention to it, you were comparing us to a town that has 12 buses. We've got to get a little more information here on what exactly would be involved. We need to bring procurement in, as Mr. Manconi mentioned, legal. It's not just snap your fingers and shut down routes in your community, for example, and turn you over the next day to a new app. There's some work that has to go into this. I agree that we need to continue to look at this option. In the months ahead, there's reports coming back to the commission on how we can make some changes and adjustments to the service going forward. But they're not going to be done on the spur of the moment. We're going to have a discussion here at the commission. We have to allow public input into that discussion at the commission meetings as well. And then staff will be directed to go. Hopefully, some of the workload that Mr. Manconi and the others have on their plate right now will be reduced so that we can take on more projects. But I would not be supportive of giving a direction to staff today to do this and then rework the work plan to find the resources. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. But I would just say that anything that we can do right now to increase our loss of fare revenue and increase efficiency should be a priority on our work plan. But thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And trust me, that is the priority of staff and the commission. Councillor Brockington.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for allowing me to come back, and I will be brief. Mr. Manconi, can you talk about funding that transit authorities are receiving from upper levels of government in 2021? Recent announcements, my understanding, are exclusively for capital projects, capital initiatives. Is there any new funding coming in 2021 for operating?
Commissioner, I was just looking to see if Wendy was on, if the treasurer was on this call. I don't believe she is. She's pulling all that together and is going to be kind of giving us a scorecard on where we are. I don't have that for you today. She's tied in with the treasurer's groups and she gets literally every day updates on those pieces. So I don't have that answer for you today, but I will talk to the treasurer and get a timeline on when she's reporting back on that.
Thank you. Just micro transit. I don't want to belabor this issue. You talked about earlier on the possibility of augmenting service in your mind, micro transit. I think that can be a benefit of it, but I'm concerned that the provincial government's main focus of microtransit is to reduce overall costs. Do you get that feeling that that's where they want us to go?
I think they want to look at, like all of us, we're concerned about costs, right? Not just for ourselves, but our future generations. And if there's ways to do this at a lower cost, you've all spoken to me about pockets of your community that, you know, doesn't meet warrants for a bus route, but how do we get people, to, you know, again, back to that first mile, last mile. So I think it's in that space. What I point to is it looks like it's new. It's not new. It's been tried. It's been failed many times in other communities, by the way. But there's other initiatives out there. There's Build a Route software that's used for longer commutes where the public agency is the provider and you get a string of neighbors to justify a bus being deployed. It's all in real time. We're going to put all of that on the table. I mean, you know, I say it over and over again, Pat's one of the best in Canada on this stuff, and I'm plugged in around the world. I think with technology, you're going to see a bunch of space opening up where you can do what we've talked about. And it's not about privatization. It's not about a two-tier system. It's about an inclusive, well-run transit system that meets the needs of everyone with the proper lenses applied to it, economic, social, equity, inclusion, caring, inclusive, safe, all those things. That's what we're going to bring back to you in terms of the space that we like to be in.
Okay. We've talked about microtransit. What's your understanding of what macrotransit is?
There are so many terminologies being thrown out there right now. What it points to is, let's be candid, the private sector wants to be in this space. The mobility space is a $1 trillion industry around the world, multi-trillion dollar industry. And they found us, they want to be in this space. And to Councillor McKenney's point, you got to be very careful. What is the mandate of public transit? It's not to make money. You're at 50% fare box recovery. It's to provide an all-inclusive mobility system for everyone across the city. And so again, back to principles. And you know, I'm not, you know, saying what Belleville did is right or wrong. They had a gap, they filled it. But you're at a different scale. You're a different pace and construct. We just want to do it right. But don't kid yourself. The private sector is chasing the bottom line here. They see a need and they're filling the need. Is it right or wrong? That's for you to decide as the Board of Governors if you want that space.
But does macro, I know what micro and macro mean, but does macro in the context of public transit just mean you have competitors offering a similar service? Right now, we have Uber, we have Lyft. People can take the e-scooters. They can drive their own vehicle. What do you consider macro transit is, just for us to have a good understanding?
Pat, do you want to kind of give a quick sense of all the flavors that are out there right now, please?
So I'll a private thought I've had, which is a little bit, it's not meant to be dismissive, but the definition of microtransit, from each company that approaches us, is very closely aligned to the service that that company offers. The companies are offering different services, and their definition of microtransit is whatever they promote, whatever they offer, whatever their services or their software provide. What's key to it all? What's common to it all is the idea that the transit vehicle responds on demand or in a way that is shaped by the demand when people actually take a specific action, whether it's by pressing a button on an app, calling into a call center, or talking to the driver on a bus at a major terminal, that there's a behind-the-scenes system that matches those trip requests into an itinerary that a vehicle can follow to pick people up and to drop people off. That's what's common to all of them. What's varied is what software they're promoting, how it connects in with our core operational software, how it faces out to customers, how it treats customers who don't have cell phones, how it works departing from a common point, What type of vehicle is used, what type of service arrangement there is with the company. And the bigger companies seem to participate in a range of these. So most of the companies we've been talking to, not all, are primarily software or software supported service companies. And they offer their services in some cases where they're providing the software service to support a municipal transit operation. In some cases, they're providing it as a contract to a municipality. In some cases, they're doing it on a cost-plus basis where they are actually providing the service. There's a wide range of possibilities. They might not all be applicable in all, they won't all be applicable in all parts of Ottawa, and we have to narrow down what parts are applicable in what parts of Ottawa, where we can find something that is responding to the policy needs of the commission, whether that is extending service, improving service, or providing service at a lower cost. So it's also, you know, we have very high transit ridership, and there's no on-demand service that's ever going to be more efficient when there's a lot of people traveling than a bus going straight up and down a street every few minutes, dropping people on and off. This is all going to be about times of day or areas of the city where ridership is low, or times of this, or new parts of the city as they're built where the travel habit hasn't yet been created. So we're looking at the experience of these companies. We're looking at the experience of the transit agencies. We're talking with Edmonton, Calgary, Regina, Sault Ste. Marie, North Bay, York Region, Belleville. I met with the fellow from Belleville probably coming up on 2-3 years ago as they were starting that demonstration project. And we have to find how it fits into a big city high ridership system like OC Transpo.
Okay, Pat, I really appreciate that reply. Thank you. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Brock. And then Councillor Meehan.
Thank you, Chair. Again, micro macro, I think it's an important distinction, because one is a private operator, and we don't want to see that. We want to protect our staff and our investment because we have a good system. What we want is a better system that's more responsive. So I'm wondering, I think because this is, we are looking at the way of the future, and we should be embracing it. Is it possible to ask maybe one or two representatives of some of the companies that are promoting this to us to address a commission meeting so we can ask our own questions?
We can look at putting this on a future agenda, Councillor Meehan. We just got to get staff past the hump that they're in right now where there's no resources available to it. But we can undertake to look at doing something on this down the road.
Yeah, I think that macro transit is the way. We use our buses, our own operators. And this can quell some of the fear that this idea is eliciting. You know, we are not out to cut jobs. We're out for efficiencies. And the efficiencies can't be attained without losing our resources, without losing the people who make our system work. So I just want to impress upon you, that's what I'm talking about. That's, you know, the key to this is the software that it can be used, and it can be used in a city the size of Ottawa, while it's being used in, it's been tried in smaller cities, Regina, Saskatoon, Stratford, yes, but it's going into big cities like Mississauga, and we should be part of that wave. And the sooner the better, okay? But I would like to, I can reach out to some of these companies and they can address us and we can ask them the questions before we proceed. But I think we have to proceed. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Meehan. So the recommendation is that the Transit Commission receive the Transit Services 2021 Business Plan and reporting on the 2020 Business Plan for information. Is this report received?
Received.
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 Thank you. Now, before we go on to the next item, which is number four, the advertising on the old train line one, I just want to clarify one thing for the benefit of those that could be watching us online or listening in. The order of the speakers is determined by Zoom. The commission members put their hand up. We go to whoever gets their hand up first. We don't randomly choose who speaks first. And as with the protocol with other standing committee members, we always try to go to the committee members first. And then anybody else, any other counselors that are joining us today, that's they get to ask their questions after the commission members have asked theirs. So I just want to get that clarified that it's not a random selection here. So on this item, advertising on Old Train Line 1, there's no presentation. We have no registered speakers. So we can go straight to questions to staff. I believe Commissioner Caricato, you had... said at the outset you wanted us to hold the item, so if you want to go first.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's really just to congratulate the great work that staff have done to prepare this report and get ready to roll out advertising on O-Train Line 1 trains and stations. Pat and John, congrats to you and your respective teams. I think it's a good plan. It's one that gets things started now and incrementally works up towards full-fledged of advertising once stage two is online. It also gives us a chance to see some revenue coming in. I completely understand that given ridership numbers and the pandemic right now, it's going to be quite low at the beginning, but I'm hopeful, like the rest of our economy, it will bounce up. And that we're going to see significant revenue going forward. It also gives us a chance to work out any kinks while it's low and sort of do any upgrades or station improvements that we need to do. So congratulations. I really like the plan. Just a couple questions, though. I guess you mentioned a bit about the gross advertising sales that the city receives. I'm wondering if you have a figure or a number that you can give us about that.
Chair, I'm going to ask Will McDonald to comment on that because there's public reporting out on that on confidentiality. Will, could you please take that question?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I don't have those figures in front of me, but I would be pleased to follow up with the commissioner.
That's great. Thanks. Maybe all of us would be interested, not just me. So maybe a report through John to the entire commission.
We'll work with Will and get you a memo to all members of commission.
Thank you. How long do you think it will take I get to pursue the extension agreement with Pattison?
Will, I think that'll be a quick exercise.
That would be my understanding as well. We're exercising a term in the existing agreement. And so it's just a matter of negotiating that extension using the existing agreement as the base.
Yeah, so adding the five-year extension that's allowed to us in the current agreement and including trains and stations. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and then once that agreement's in place, how quickly do you think we can move forward?
Our signal to them will be we want to move as quickly as possible. You're interested in this revenue. It's the industry right now is in flux like everything else. And as vaccinations roll out and, you know, you heard about, you know, possible concerts coming and so forth, I think they'll leverage those things as much as possible. So we will move quickly.
Yeah. Okay, great. I guess that was really, so are the trains already fit with framing and in the stations?
Yes, there's frames in the trains, just like the buses. And in the stations, all that space that we use for safety and learning experiences, that will then now turn into advertising space.
Okay, that's great. So by the end of this year, or by the fall, when ridership starts to come back, we hope we'll have some ads on our trains. Is that accurate?
If they're ready to go, we will go as quickly as possible.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Appreciate the work that you guys have put into this. And yeah, congrats. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner Caricato. Next up is Councillor Brockington. And Vice Chair Cloutier, could I get you to take over for a couple of minutes, please?
Thank you, Chair, absolutely. Councillor Brockington, please.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Certainly new revenue that's not from taxpayers or our riders is very good. So I'm very happy to see the possibilities here. And I note that we're generating about 2.2 million per year. The staff saying because they haven't entered negotiations yet, we don't know what the net increase will be to that annual amount. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Given that these negotiations hasn't started, I wouldn't want to prejudice the negotiations by making any estimates at this point.
So what if Pattison says, well, look, your ridership is at record lows. We're not going to have the target market in your stations, trains, and buses that you normally have. We're going to lowball you. What if you just think it's not good enough? Are we handcuffing you into signing an agreement? Or what if, based on your professional appearance, you just don't think it's a good enough deal for us?
So, Mr. Chair, exercising the extension in the contract would only be done if it's determined it's in the best interest of the city to do so. And so that would be as a result of a successful negotiation with the incumbent.
Okay. So do you have certain criteria already established?
So, Mr. Chair, as I indicated, I think, you know, I caution having this discussion just in this form, given that we haven't entered into negotiations yet. I wouldn't want to prejudice those negotiations.
Fair enough.
Councillor, maybe I can help. Your question is important, and I won't prejudice the discussions, but I can tell you that we have comparable data. So for example, I know the Calgary operation, they have LRT on rail. So the market rates pre-COVID were pretty much standard in urban cities, save and except the downtown New York City and stuff. So, you know, we have a lot of intel and we've done market soundings in the past, again, all pre-COVID. So it's going to be, we're going to roll up the sleeves and try to get the best value. But if it's not a good value, we'll come back and say, hey, it's not worth doing that right now.
Yeah. All I'm saying is we're in the trough right now and we're about to go up. So why sign when we're right here when we can achieve a much better deal when we're up here? So
Will drives a hard bargain. Trust me. He and I will push hard.
I'm looking for, in addition to what we would normally think about advertising on the buses, on trains, you know, just above, close to the ceiling, advertisements when you walk in, is there ability to have more animated advertising where, I don't know, can you print something on the back of a paper transfer? Can you have people in our stations representing companies handing out like gum or something? Like, what does advertising entail?
That all comes later on. And if you're chasing the big money in this space, it's called station domination. And you can see that if you go to Montreal, where an entire station is the color of the brand that you're pushing. So everywhere you go, you see that brand. That's where the big money is. The paper transfer stuff, everybody's going automated. It's not as big. The in-person stuff, you got to be careful with that. We got busker rules and so forth. But station domination is the big one. We have ruled out and we will never support vehicle wraps because that causes a lot of damages to your vehicles and you'll get into big cost recoveries with RTG and RTM on that. So the exterior of the vehicles we're staying away from, but your big play comes when we put all this together as part of the massive system that you'll have with a very captive audience.
Excellent. Okay, thanks very much and good luck.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Kavanaugh.
Thank you. No, I support this and I appreciate the work that's been done on this. I remember going to London on the tube system and reading all the advertisements for the shows that are coming up. All the so it was fun. So I think that can be part of our tourism package as well, just talking about what's going on. Once we get back into that, of course, let's keep dreaming. We will get back there. I just have a question regarding what we accept for advertising. We have had issues in the past on our buses, and I want to make sure that we don't have that again. And I think you know what I'm talking about. I was very concerned. it's to do with gender equity because it was issues related to anti-choice, and it was very disturbing. So I just want to make sure that that's not going to happen again.
So I will go first, and then I will ask legal to comment. Counselor, I'm glad you raised this. I'm being my usual candid self. Careful what you wish for. You will get what you've had in the past, and staff cannot say no to certain advertising. So we've had the abortion issues. We've had a famous pop star that was deemed inappropriate, but we had to keep it on. We had 9/11, anti-9/11 conspiracy theories, which is very controversial. Some members were still on commission back then. This is what comes with advertising. And if Mr. O'Connor, I know he dealt with it when he was a city solicitor, but legal, the opinions are crystal clear on what we can and cannot say no to. And it puts staff in a horrible position. And we have a process for that. When we get complaints, we will notify council. There's been a complaint and there's nothing we can do about it. So it comes. It's come in the past. It's going to come with this. It's part of this business. And the Supreme Court rulings were very, very prescriptive of what we can say no to and not, and what we say yes to. So I don't know if legal's on the phone or Rick, I'd hate to put you on the spot, but I know you know the file like the back of your hand. Counselor, I just wanted to be very open about that.
John, this is Taffy. Yes, OC Transpo did a review back in 2015 on the advertising standards. And we're always kept in loop with not only the standards established by Advertising Standards Canada, but also the legal cases. And so we always are looking at that lens, just exactly what you spoke about earlier. So yes, that is correct.
It's very concerning. We'll have to play it by ear, but. I appreciate your candidness, but of course, we'll be watching. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. And thank you, Mr. McDonald, for being with us today to answer questions as well. So, Commission, the recommendation is that the Transit Commission approve that the city enter into an agreement with Patterson Outdoor Advertising to expand the existing contract to include O Trains Line 1 and stations to extend the contract until the year of the Stage 2 O-Train extensions expected revenue service availability. Is that recommendation carried?
Carried.
Thank you. We have no in-camera items today. Are there any notices of motion? Okay, hearing none. Are there any inquiries? I believe, Councillor Brockington, you had one.
No, that's been dealt with through the questioning, Chair. Thank you.
Been dealt with? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have an inquiry.
Okay.
And Mr. Manconi, when you were presenting, you noted that there had been 71 cases of COVID out of a population, OC Transpo employee population of 3,000. That translates into an incidence rate about 50% higher than the general population in the city. And I'm just hoping that you could consult with Ottawa Public Health to determine if that is just a statistical anomaly. It is something that we should be concerned about. And if it is something that we should be concerned about, if there's something more that can be done.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Manconi, do you want to take that as an inquiry or do you want to try to answer that today?
I'm glad to answer it right now if you give me that privilege.
Let's do that, please.
Okay. Great question, Commissioner. So we, every single report, we are joined with, we have a strategic partnership with Public Health where they analyze the incident, they do contact tracing and so forth. And absolutely to your point, they are looking at our trend line and they will tell us if there's a transmission issue or an issue in the workplace. There is none. There has been none. It's basically your question to a T in terms of we are tracking. We've been tracking it since day one of COVID, and public health is absolutely doing everything you've said. Is if there's an incident, making us aware of it, and what do we do about it? So we're it's an anomaly.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Manconi. Does that satisfy your question, Commissioner Olson?
Yes, that is fine. Thank you, Chair.
Perfect. Okay. Seeing no other inquiries, is there?
Sorry, Chair. Okay. Yeah, my mic was off when I yelled the first time, so I do have an inquiry. Thank you. Several of our transit bus operators have expressed concern in the past that they're being denied access to employee washrooms at LRT stations. According to some operators, RTG has told operators who drive buses that stop at Riedel, Parliament Line, and Pimisi stations.
You're breaking up, Councillor McKenna. You're breaking up.
To use employee washrooms. Councillor, shall be provided from.
Councillor McKenna, we're having a lot of trouble hearing what you were saying there. I wonder if you want to try it one more time with the camera off and see if that comes through.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. I'll start over then. Several of our transit bus operators have expressed concern in the past that they are being denied access to employee washrooms at LRT stations. According to some operators, RTG has told operators who drive buses that stop at Riedel, Parliament Line, and Pimisi stations that they are not entitled to use the employee washrooms. As an agency that operates in two provinces, OC Transpo is governed by the Canada Labour Code. And according to the labor code, if feasible, a toilet room shall be provided for employees. So my questions to staff are the following. Is RTG permitted to deny access to washrooms on city-owned property to city employees? Does the city carry any liability for failing to meet the Canada Labor Code provisions regarding employee washroom access? How many complaints have been received about the lack of access to washrooms by bus operators? Are you aware of any staff resigning due to the lack of washrooms, and how many? And how many women operators have resigned as a result of RTG's refusal to allow employee washroom use?
Thank you, Councillor McKenna. That came through very clear this time. Mr. Manconi, again, I'll offer, do you want to try to address this now or do you want to take it away?
I'd rather have it come back in a formal response, if that's
okay. Okay. All right. Thanks. As you wish. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other inquiries? Okay. Seeing none. Is there any other business? Okay. Motion to adjourn. Vice Chair, can we get a motion to adjourn?
Motion that the Transit Commission meeting of St. Patrick's Day, Wednesday, March 17th, be adjourned.
Thank you. I'm assuming that's carried. There will be a media availability at 12:45 for those interested. And the next regular meeting will be on Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. Okay, thank you all, and I hope you have a happy and safe St. Patrick's Day. Sorry. For some reason, I want to say Molly Maguire's, and I'm sure for those of you that are over 35, you'll know exactly what I meant by that and how my brain went there. Anyway, thank you all. Bye now.
Thank you, merci.
Thanks, Chair.